powered from the Perdomo Cigar Studios on the Red Stage in Indian Trail, North Carolina, and broadcasting from the HF Barcelona Studios in Euless, Texas. Welcome to Primetime Special Edition 85. Tonight, it's another conceptual show. As we finish up our aging experiment on the Tabernacle 142 from Foundation Cigar Company, we're also going to talk cigar media, PCA, CRA Town Hall, Nat Sherman, One Must Go, and great things are happening here, our brand new segment. And as always, Primetime Special Edition is sponsored by Perdomo Cigars. Awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand has consistently earned the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers: a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan sun-grown, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautifully bourbon barrel-aged wrappers with thick, high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with layers of rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigar is a family-owned and operated company headquartered in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo Estate Selección Vintage, the Perdomo Double H 12-Year Vintage, Perdomo 20th Anniversary, the Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Line, the Perdomo Habano Bourbon Barrel Age, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Aganorsa Leaf. Great leaf makes great cigars. Aganorsa Leaf stands out because of the distinctive flavor of our Corojo 99 and Criollo 98 seeds cultivated by Cuban agronomists on the best lands of Jalapa and Esteli, Nicaragua. When you smoke one of our JFR Lunatic, Guardian of Fumble, Casa Fernandez cigars, you'll experience the new taste and aroma that makes Aganorsa Leaf special. Smoke one today and enjoy the signature flavor of Aganorsa Leaf. And by Drew Estate. Check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. It's available on iTunes and Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And as always, the live streaming for the Primetime Network of shows, as well as our California studios on Thursday night, are sponsored exclusively by Drew Estate. Welcome, everybody. This is Primetime Special Edition number 85. Today is Tuesday, October 6, 2020. This is Will Cooper. I am on the Black Stage here in the Palacio Perdomo Cigar Studios. And I'm joined cross-country in Euless, Texas at the HF Barcelona Studios by my friend and colleague, Mr. Bear DuPlessis.
Good evening, Coop. Good evening. The first thing I was going to do is tell you to turn around. Cause you said the red stage, when we kicked off there.
So. Oh, I got the black stage on tonight. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. The black stage. Well, you said it right the second time. The first time you said the red stage though, I was like, oh man.
We normally use the red stage for, I completely forgot to move the stage. So we're getting a special black stage edition of special edition. Wow. I didn't even realize that.
There you go.
Yeah. So, I told you I didn't take a nap awesome. Before the show tonight. So that was a lot of the reason there.
Yeah. No worries at all. I just wanted to bust your balls a little bit there. I'm excited that I get to experience the full package of the Perdomo Palatial Studios, the black and the red. Now I've experienced both. So this is,
yep. No, this, that's,
I'm upper class. Quick question.
Yes.
Just to kick us off here. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we talked about costumes a couple weeks ago with, the fall kind of kicking off and everything.
Yes.
So I was thinking about this again today. So what was trick-or-treating, and I'm going to sound like such a dick here, but like, what was trick-or-treating like in your day?
Wow, it was very different, because by the time you were in third grade, you didn't go with your parents. You didn't go with your mom, right? And trick-or-treat was long. It would start at right after you got home from school. And this is in New York and Staten Island and Brooklyn. It would start right after you got out of school. 3:30, and it would go until dusk.
Oh, wow.
When it got dark. Most of the trick-or-treating we did took place in the late afternoon as it was getting darker. But we did not do trick-or-treating in the dark. And I think maybe that has to do with something with being in an urban neighborhood. But we didn't go with our parents. We didn't go trick-or-treating in the dark. And we would cover – the other thing we would do is we'd go into different, neighborhoods. So we'd go in our neighborhood, but we sometimes knew other neighborhoods had better candy or just kind of wanted to explore it. So that wasn't the way my kids went trick-or-treating in the late 90s, where, you know, my wife was with them. It was structured hours, and it was at night they went. So it was very different. Yeah.
It's gotten worse, Coop. Well, I mean, COVID probably puts a damper on all kind of trick-or-treating. But, like, no, the big rage right now is no trick-or-treating, and not even trick-or-treating on Halloween. They do trunk-or-treats.
We had those.
So the church groups do them a lot, but then there's a lot of schools that are doing them and organizations. They'll, like, have, you know, you go into this huge parking lot, everyone pops their trunk, and everyone goes from car to car to
right. My kids did that. So when we said that, it was my kids. We didn't do that going up. Yeah.
No, I remember, like, kind of a cross between what your kids did a little bit with going during, like, structured hours, and then what you did.
Right.
You know, in the afternoon, like, we did, like, in the dusky hours, we would go to places that we knew. And then afterwards, we would have a little fun, and we would go to a couple of places that we thought were cool. And then when we got a little older, and when my older, like, our older siblings could, like, drive us and could get, like, the really good candy.
Yeah. That's interesting that you said that too. The other dynamic we had were apartment buildings. Going in the apartment buildings was a completely different dynamic. And back then you didn't have a lot. There was a lot less security on the apartment buildings too. So sometimes you had to get buzzed in, but a lot of times you didn't. And going in the apartment buildings was great because if there was cold weather or rainy weather, you didn't have to deal with being outside. And it was a little different dynamic. You know, the elevators kind of sucked in some of the elevators doing that because you had crowded elevators, but that was a whole other dynamic. That was something that I don't think a lot of people have experienced, at least around my circles right now. I know my wife and kids didn't have that dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things, like, I think that, like, generationally speaking, like, it's just going to be different, I think. Even, like, when I have, you know, hopefully one day, you know, God willing, have grandchildren, right? Then, you know, that's something that, like, it's going to look completely different. It's just going to be looking completely different.
I think it's going to look completely different. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's very different 40 years now. It has massively changed. I mean, the other thing is there was no such thing as canceling Halloween. There was no such thing as having Halloween on an alternate day. You know, it was Halloween the 31st. You went after school, rain or shine. It was never canceled.
That's pretty cool. But that, I mean, that's a long time. I mean, that's like 3 or 4 solid hours of, like, you know, rocking and rolling and going and find some candy, man. I mean, that's pretty baller.
Yeah. Like I said, they were long, and it was sometimes you'd actually take a bag of candy back to your house. That's something. I mean, we get a lot of candy doing that. But I think as things changed it became more necessary where, you know, the third grader couldn't really go off on his own anymore, where you had to have a parent now. So that kind of changed, a great deal.
Did that change like before you had kids, do you think? Like, I mean, like, you did you or did that change like after you had kids? Like, we, I feel like we still ran around a little bit in the neighborhood, a little bit, and I feel like it was just after my childhood when people really started being like uber protective, like helicopter parents. And I'm not judging, man. I'm a helicopter dad. Like, I'm guilty of that. Like, I straight up, like, I play on jungle gyms with my kids just because I'm scared to death that something's gonna happen with them, you know?
Yeah. My daughter was born in 92. Timmy was born in 95. And I want to say it was probably by the time Timmy was born that it started to change. But when my daughter was born in 92 as an infant, I think it was still very much the same as I would. It seemed like 95, 96, 97, that's when it started to turn over.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just changed. Yeah.
Dude, it looks like my connection's been really bad. It's been popping in and out. I'm gonna do a quick reset. So before we kind of get into everything, I'm gonna out and pop back in. Is that
okay?
Sound good?
That sounds good. I was wondering if it was me because you froze a couple times.
Okay.
All right.
It's
in the meantime,
on my end, so.
So in the meantime, I'll announce the contest. So go ahead.
Thanks.
So hey guys, we have another contest tonight. And as always, our contests are sponsored by Tabacalera USA. And last month we gave away a Trinidad gift set. And we have another one enough to give away tonight. So let me kind of tell you what this gift set's about. And it can kind of go there. It consists of three things. You got a set of Trinidad Espiritu dominoes. So this is a nice set. I have this sealed here, so I don't want to open it, but it's a nice set of dominoes, Trinidad Espiritu dominoes. You get a mini boombox. This mini boombox, it has a wireless phone charger, and it's got a speaker. So you could just it's a simple one, but it works pretty good. And batteries are included, at least, so that's a good thing. So you get the batteries included with that. And finally, which I think is the coolest thing out there, this is – a band bank. So it's like a bank where you put money in, which you could still put money in, but it's meant to put your cigar bands in there. And I'm going to actually open this up to show everybody what this is. Because I think this is a really cool, this is a cool concept here. Oh, there we go. The packing things go flying, but here we go. This is a Trinidad branded bank. Anything you put your bands in at the top, they kind of float into there. And it's a really cool way to display your cigar bands. So you get the band bank, the mini boombox, and the domino set. Now, what do you need to do to win? Bear gets mad at me. I know he's back because I make the contest too easy, right? But I'm making this one easy because for everybody, right? So all you have to do, okay, to win this is put in the comments, give me an experience you've had with a Trinidad cigar. So give me and you have to hashtag it Trinidad 50 because Trinidad is they had their 50th anniversary and the Espiritu was released last year. Trinidad must be spelled correctly. So, Trinidad. So Google if you want to correct, but tell me an experience you've had smoking a Trinidad, a non-Cuban Trinidad, please. We'll pick one winner at random. If you haven't smoked a Trinidad, you can give me something saying what you may want to try a Trinidad. So that's fine too. But yeah, hashtag it with Trinidad 50. It must go in the video on the Cigar Coop page. So please do that. And the other thing, please, if you're entering the contest, please be accessible through Facebook Messenger or on the comments here to get me your contact information. If you can't do it or if you're just not online every day, I'd advise please not entering because I'm going to have to give it to someone else. And I don't want to do that. I want to give it to the winner. So to win the set, tell me your experience you've had with a Trinidad cigar or a Trinidad cigar you may want to try. Non-Cuban, please. Hashtag Trinidad 50. And we got Bear back. Do we have Bear back?
Yeah, we're good. So Trinidad, and hashtag Trinidad 50. Also, make sure that you're on the Coop page.
Yes.
So if you're viewing this video through my shared or on page on LLC Fomar or someone else who shared it, make sure you go to Cigar Coop page. Okay.
And no private no private messages, please. So because they're not gonna get counted. I got contest entries with private messages. In general, let me just kind of say something. Private messenger is the worst way to reach us during the show. We will try our best always through the Facebook comments. Okay. Just because I do not look at the private messages during the show because I got a lot of screens. So we will try to do that. And by the way, Stuart Louis got the prize pack last time, and he is really raving about this prize pack. So there's someone out there to do that. So definitely enter. And so the other thing what I'll mention is with this contest, okay, let me mention another contest. Where we do contests on Coop and Primetime, but got two going on this week. There is the Primetime Ultimate Battle of the Bands Ultimate Sampler giveaway. All right, I'm celebrating losing Battle of the Bands. But I really, like I said, it was very, and I'll talk about it a little later, it was a really good experience that I had with Battle of the Bands. Just the feedback I got was fantastic. So you can enter this. Normally I have a rule you can't enter the contest again, but you can enter both of these contests. I'm waiving the rules about winning in the last 3 months. If you go to the Battle of the Bands, go to Scar Crew page, I'm giving away a limited edition Battle of the Bands t-shirt in extra large size. There's no substitutions on that. One of the Scar Crew Battle of the Bands samplers, which includes the EP Carrillo Lank Ghost, the My Father El Hijo, the Perdomo ESV Maduro Box Press, the Aladino Cameroon, and the Scar of the Decade, the La Aurora Cien Años Edición Especial. And, oh, yeah, I'm going to throw an extra 5-pack of the La Aurora Cien Años Edición Especial. That's the Maduros. I have a little mini swag kit of just some promotional stuff I got. And I'm giving you a $50 gift certificate to spend in Spokane. You can't beat that. So all you have to do is go to the Cigar Coop page. You'll see that right at the top, and the instructions to enter are there. But basically, you got to tell me why my sampler pack was awesome, because I need to feel good that I got beaten so badly by an accessories company. So yeah, I got beat by an accessories company. I didn't get beat by some. No, he did. No, that's a little joke, but something we'll get into in our segment in a little bit. So I got to feel, but no, the feedback I got, Bear, from this was, you know, we bust on you for being the passionate guy. There was just some really good feedback I got from the samplers and people who tried it. And I felt really good. I felt I just wanted to do something to give back here.
No, I mean, I saw the contest and I was really excited that, that we were offering that up to our audience. Right. You know, you put that together, really fantastic. I mean, it's quite a deal. So, but the question on everybody's mind though, is this an extra large in like everybody's world, or is this an extra large in Cigar Swag world? Cause if it's an extra large in Cigar Swag world, there's like very few people that are going to be able to fit into it.
It should be okay. It should be okay. Okay. The problem is if I do double XLs and triple XLs, it there's no win situation. So, but I can't substitute them. You have to take the extra. Hopefully there's enough other stuff in there where you can always give it to a friend if it doesn't fit you. So
nice. Nice. Yeah. No, man, I'm really, really excited for whoever gets to win that prize pack. Cause it's going to be, it's awesome. And the Trinidad one is too, man. I that, you know, man, they've been doing such a great job of putting together these prize packs for us, like really unique stuff.
Right. We're not
like the Onyx money clip and everything. Like you see money clips every now and then, but it's not like the proverbial hat and t-shirt thing, you know?
Yeah. No, it is. They've been Altadis, and we just extended the arrangement with them. We're going to have a new segment with Altadis in a little bit as well. Tobacco Area Say, they've done a great job. And Raphael and Diana and the team at Altadis, I can't say enough. They're giving us really good stuff. They're letting us kind of we're rotating different brands each month. This was the coolest. They've all been great. That one was the coolest one by far. You got your money clip, right? Because I had an extra money clip, so I kind of sent that.
Yes.
To you.
Yes.
Okay, so you got that, which is good. And they get the prizes out right away. So when I get the winner selected, I give it to them, and it goes right out. And then I have a promotional one they keep as well that we may do some extra giveaways with at some point. So that's
terrific.
We have a few extra things lying around that we could probably use for some other giveaways. So so stay tuned on that as well. Without further ado, I think what we should do is light up our cigar for the aging room experiment. So we kind of switched a couple things around. I didn't light up yet, did you?
No, man.
Okay.
Are you kidding? I wasn't going to light up without you.
Okay. So let's kind of get into
I mean, you could have done it to me, and yeah, but I wouldn't. I wasn't going to do it without you.
Yeah. Jay, I want a Raphael bobblehead.
Would be so cool.
Dude, if we get Raphael Nodal bottleheads, that would be... Yes, this is very good. Very good. I'm sorry, Raphael. That was a bad
Raphael. Long as it's got the blue, as long as it has the blue glasses.
Yeah, the blue. You got to have the Raphael blue, and he's got to wear his suit. Blue. I mean, he's got to be wearing his suit.
The blue glasses, the suit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
let's talk a little bit about the cigar again. Recap this.
Yeah. So let me, before, for folks who may not have ever tuned in, what is aging experiment? You know, when Bear and I started doing the show 3 years, 3.5 years ago, almost now. I think we got to know each other, and one thing we both discovered is we both love aging cigars. So we said, hey, why don't we actually go ahead and pick up some cigars, smoke some now and smoke some later, and see how they age over time. So in 2018, we did our first aging experiment. It was on the Todos Los Dias by Steve Saka. We bought some and smoked some 6 months later. And then in 2019, we brought in the Crown Heads La Carême.
Yes.
And we decided to expand it, doing it one now, one in 6 months, and one in a year. And then, like, late last year, we started the Tabernacle 142 by Foundation Cigar Company. We smoked one about 14 months ago. It was that long. And then we smoked one, I want to say it was March, around March.
Yeah, it was like around the seventh or eighth month.
Yeah.
We didn't quite do it six months.
We didn't do it quite 6 months. And so we went 6 months now since then. And a lot of it had to do with end of year stuff and just shows we had to get in, things like that. So these are 14, like these were purchased at the same time. Like our cigars was purchased at the same time. They've been aging at least. I did move the humidor. I got it. By the way, we both lost our cigars before the show, which was really funny. But I did move the humidor because the Cigar Oasis did. I know what happened is it malfunctioned. I had to replace it, and I ended up moving cigars out. And it alerted me immediately it was malfunctioning, right? So I caught it immediately, and I put it in the other humidor, and then I forgot I did that, and I'm going through the humidor. Where the hell's this thing? So it was in the backup humidor, which also had a Cigar Oasis in it. So, so we're going to light these up right now.
So I don't know about you, Coop. I was talking to you a little bit before the show. There's actually some plume on my wrapper.
Yeah, I didn't have quite that. I got to be honest with you on that. But, yeah, you were telling me about that.
So, and then just a reminder, what was the humidity level at for you?
I keep it about 67.
Okay.
I keep it a little lower than maybe most people.
Mine floats between 67 and 71. So
you have a
just
little,
depends.
But you're a little drier out where you are compared to where I am. We have a lot more humidity, at least, especially in the summer.
Did you smell the wrapper before you lit it?
Yep.
It's got a little sweetness to it.
It's got sweetness. It lost some of the barnyardy stuff. I mean, if you
yeah.
So it's a lot more sweeter.
Sure did.
Yeah. This blend was, we've talked about it, a wrapper. It's got the hybrid Havana Seed Connecticut 142. So it's a proprietary wrapper that Nick Malo is using. It's got a San Andreas Mexican binder. It's got a combination of Nicaraguan and Honduran tobaccos for the filler. It is made at the A.J. Fernandez Cigar Factory in Esteli, Nicaragua. Which I think we talked about this, Bear. This cigar, I kind of looked at Tabernacle as Nick Melillo's version of a Connecticut Broadleaf U.S. Habano wrapper he wanted. And if that sounds familiar,
yeah,
it's Liga Privada uses that. Number 9 uses the Broadleaf, the Connecticut Broadleaf, and they use the Stalk Road Habano for T52. So I look at this line as Nick wanted to have his version of those. I think both cigars are very different from the Drew Estate ones he has done.
100%.
This cigar landed on the Coupe Countdown in 2019 at number 15. In the Toro.
The Havana site. Seed or the original Havana Seed.
The Toro landed on the top 15, but I went with the Robusto for this experiment. So I'm about to light mine up as well. So these are, like I said, these are aged tobacco. I think when we smoked it at the 6 month level, we definitely saw positive effect on the aging. Am I wrong on that? I'm trying to remember because I did watch it. You there, Bear? Okay.
I remember liking the 6 month a little bit more, slightly above the original, I believe, just a little bit. It took a little bit of that edge off.
Right. I think that's what we said. It was slightly, it wasn't a big difference. Now, when we did Le Carême with the 6 and the 12 month, we saw a huge jump at the 6 month level. And then at the 1 year level, we actually saw it maybe valley a bit. You know, it kind of went over the curve. So somewhere it peaked in that, I'd say maybe that six to, you know, around the 6 month mark, maybe a little before, but maybe a little before or after. But the 12 months, it lost a little bit. It wasn't bad, but it lost a little.
Yeah, the... Well, I still contend that the La Carême Robusto that we smoked at 6 months is the best crowned heads I've ever smoked.
Oh, like, without a doubt. I think we were in agreement on that. And, you know, you had Ben Lee on your show Sunday night. And I think I told the story. When Ben Lee and I first smoked Le Carême's, we had a bad experience with them. And Ben, who's like a guy who knows crowned heads, I went and messaged him. I said, Ben, what the fuck's up with this Le Carême? This is not what I would expect a crowned head cigar to come out with. He says, they're not ready. He goes, I agree with you. So, you know, when I put him away, suddenly, you know, that cigar became, when it was ready, it was ready. And that was why it was such a good candidate, I thought, for the aging experiment.
I remember you suggesting that to me, and I really like that idea because as I've often said about cigar aging, now this isn't an absolute, as I've always found the same, but what I've said is that typically, you know, cigars that are lighter, you know, cigars with wrappers that are lighter in color, okay, age better than darker wrappers, typically.
Typically, yes. I think there are some exceptions. But, for example, Liga Privada, number 9 does not age well. Darker wrapper. Padron 1964 Maduros, they don't age well. I've seen the same thing with the Padron 60. 26s are a different animal.
No, the 26s, I think, age well. The 1964s, I completely agree with you on the Padron side. As far as like, but Drew Estate is beholden to that. They'll tell you not to age them. They'll tell you to smoke.
John, they're ready to be smoked. Yeah. Yeah. They're definitely, I would agree. Now, T52 is another story. You could put T52s away for a long time and they age great. They'll age really good. But yeah, nines, I have some 10-year-old number nines. I don't even want to light up anymore.
Be interesting to see what they taste like, though.
Yeah. Yeah. This was picked, I think, because of my whole, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it was picked because of this whole, what I call the tabernacle syndrome that happened in 2018. Like, this cigar came out in 2018. It was a December release, right? And we had gotten one at the trade show, and Nick Malone had told us they were not ready.
Right.
Then came December, and I thought they were not where they should be yet. But I could see it was getting better. But there was suddenly a run of these cigars making the end of the year list. And I'm like, well, how are these the December releases? They haven't had a chance to germinate, right? How are these cigars like landing number? You're going to tell me these cigars off the truck are number one. I wasn't seeing it. So I dubbed this whole thing of reviewers putting their, and we're going to talk about media tonight, reviewers putting their favorite brands on reviewing their favorite brands to get them on a list. I called it the Tabernacle Syndrome. I actually told Nick Malone that, so.
No, you did. No, and it was actually in that interview that we did. It was a milestone interview that we did with Nick, where he was talking about how well these cigars should age. And so we're like, we were winding down the La Carême experiment. So we're like, we found our next cigar. So. I've got a couple of ideas for the next one.
I'm cool with it. Yeah.
I think this has kind of been fun to kind of redo and kind of get people to encourage people to really track their aging of their cigars and really get them to like really reflect on what they're experiencing from like straight off the shelf to a few months in and just a year later.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would recommend, you know, labeling your cigars with the, when you bought them and when you put them in the humidor or something like that, because it'll be easier to find them. So you could use Post-its, you could use Sharpies on the cellophane, which I do it. I'll be honest with you, I do it.
I do. I do put Sharpies on the cellophane.
I put Sharpies on the cellophane. I'm okay. You just got to be careful because there's some porous ones. You just got to be a little aware. Like, I can tell you there's a couple companies that use porous ones. You got to be a little careful with that. But
well, what I do is I usually write it on the where the label is.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Do it up there and you'll be fine. Yeah. Do I always do that? No, I get lazy sometimes. But or I'll use like I know, for example, like we just had Santana Diaz from DeCrossier on. He uses porous. He uses some porous cellophane. So I think Nick Perdomo uses some as well. So you want to just be a little careful when you do that. And this
is gonna like you want to talk about nerding out though about something so stupid and innocuous though. I mean, you want to know who has really some really badass cellophane?
Who?
It's Gabby Caffey.
Really? I have to pay.
That cellophane's so freaking cool. Oh, it's I mean, you can feel the difference.
Yeah.
It's so obnoxious. It's awesome. It's like I said. I know our audience is just riveted by this amazing discussion about cellophane, but it's really, really like you can just tell the difference. Like you instantly feel his cellophane in between your fingers and you're like, holy cow, this is different. This is like, it's thick. And I've been aging some cigars of his and I just pulled one out actually earlier this week and I smoked it and it was freaking phenomenal. Really enjoyed the blend. And I really had some really nice age on it too. Not nice age. It was like, you know, decent age on it. I had about 9 months on it.
Yeah, I got a couple Caffey cigars coming up for review later this year. I know the San Andreas is coming in for review. I got my hands on some of those. What are your initial impressions of this?
Am I crazy or did some of the spice come back?
Yes, I got more spice up front. That was my first observation, and I don't remember getting as much of that spice up front.
Yeah, it's gotten spicier.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not intrusive.
No, but it's I don't remember. Kinda, yeah, it's more than I remember. It's a little more earthy than that. Like I was getting more of that richer coffee note maybe last time. A little more earthy this time.
Yeah, I think that the yeah, some more earthiness.
Yeah.
I'm getting something else. It's I'm trying to pinpoint it.
When I reviewed the Toro originally, I was getting a little more of this orange rind note. I'm not getting that orange rind note at all.
No, it's not. There's nothing. It's not. It doesn't have any acidity right now. I do remember that kind of creeping into the toward. I do remember that creeping in the original.
Yeah. And when I reviewed this, it was 4.5 months it had been out, the cigar, when I reviewed it. And I felt like when, but that was a Toro size. So again, I'll consider that a. Like, the way I review a cigar is a Toro and a Robusto are two completely separate cigars, regardless if they have the same tobacco composition.
It's... Sorry, I'm really trying to put this together. There's something that's just
the spice is starting to settle.
The spice is a little, it's starting to settle, but it was like right off the get it. They really kind of hit this really nice high pepper note. Yeah. It was a short finish though. Like, did you notice how it like went away?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like it kind of like, it didn't punch you in the face, but it kind of just, it lets you know it was there.
Yep.
And then it kind of just, it really dwindled quickly. And then it's kind of starting to settle a little bit. Yep. I'm getting this kind of, oh God, it's kind of like, it's savory. It's not quite like beef consomme. It's not like that rich of a beef flavor, but it's kind of faint and distinct, kind of real savory.
I'm not getting that. I'm definitely not getting that. But it's almost like the coffee note's starting to try to push in here right now. How's your retrohale?
Really awesome. I'm getting this real nice.
Your retrohale is fantastic right now.
It's really good. I'm getting this really nice, like really nice dense woodiness to it.
Yeah.
And really nice. The spice is not as sharp anymore, but it's just starting to linger just a little bit longer. I am getting a little bit of that chicory finish on the finish of the mouthfeel.
Yeah. By the way, Alan Rubin's starting to talk Yankees as they close the game to 5-4. Just observation.
Yeah, I saw that Stanton hit another homer.
Yep. Yeah, Alan said that as well. But anyway, back to the cigar. Now that this spice is selling, I am starting to get some of the coffee note coming in here right now. And it's nice. It's really nice. That's settling in right now. But I got more spice up front. I'm going to agree with you on that. I'm impressed with this so far.
It's nice.
Yeah. It is.
So if memory serves me correct, I believe the six on the locker run, the 6 month was the absolute best, right?
Right. We said that was a peak. Yes.
I think we liked it right off the shelf. And I think like second. And then I think we liked the year age long. We liked it the least.
I think we agree with that. It wasn't bad, but I think it was one that we concluded you want to smoke in the first 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, and someone can fact check, but that's how I'm remembering it. This one just seems to be getting better. This one already, the spice thing kind of threw me a bit, but once it kind of, I don't know if your spice is kind of tickered down, but mine is kind of settled down, and it's really smoking nice right now. This is a solid medium right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's earthy, it's coffee. Yeah. I'm getting that savory note now. I'm getting it. It's
weird, right?
Yeah,
like, it's really hard to describe.
And I'm getting it, yeah. Would you say, of the three cigars we did, Todos Los Dias, I know we didn't do a year on that one, La Carême, and Tabernacle, would you say that this one has changed the most over a year? I know we can't say it like with Sakas, though.
I've smoked a Todos Los Dias in a year, and that's unfair to bring into this discussion, but mm-hmm. I will anyway.
Okay.
I think the Todos Los Dias, so far, we haven't finished the cigar.
Right.
I really like the Todos Los Dias in a year. Just
we with that one got better over time. Yeah.
But yeah, that one got better over time.
I'll take your word on that.
I've liked the progression of this one a little bit more so far. We'll see how it finishes. We'll see how it finishes. It could certainly do something here in just a second. Yep. Mm-hmm. and not perform well. So I don't want to knock on wood, of course, but this one has actually been, you know, a really nice progression of it. Yeah. So with Todos Los Dias, I think when we first did it, there is just so uh, there was just a lot of nuance and a lot of flavor and complexity and right off the shelf. And I think those really mellowed so much in the 6 months that I think it was kind of hard to appreciate, contextually speaking, at the time.
Yeah.
But actually having smoked that after a year and everything, you kind of appreciate the progression that it does a little bit. From my perspective, but I think this has been kind of the most gradual, certainly again, in small sample size, the most gradual progression of, I mean, so far I definitely like the straight off the shelf one the least.
That goes back to my point when this cigar was starting to place on all these lists. Like, if that cigar had come out in January, right, it probably organically would have rose to the top of the list, is where I was getting at. But it only made lists because people, like, bumped other stuff to review it. And I understand it's a Nick Melillo release. It's high profile. Just, you know, Nick Melillo's pop. There's no one hotter than Nick and Steve right now. So I get it, right? But this is why I've used a two-year window with rating cigars at the end of the year. Because I think you could take even when I did it last year, I smoked one probably at 10 months, right? But it was a Toro size. And I thought that was smoking better than the one when I reviewed it 6 months earlier.
Yeah.
But the other thing is here's the other thing I'll say. When I got that Toro cigar for the ranking, it wasn't an aging experiment cigar. In other words, I picked it up afterwards. So it wasn't a 10, like it wasn't a, I don't know how long that cigar had been sitting in the retail shelf when I got it. And Jay says, am I ignoring Steve Saka's advice on carbonated water, unsalted cracker, and a cup of coffee beans? Absolutely, I am.
I also just responded. I've had crackers for dinner, Jay. So just FYI.
By the way, here's why I am, right? Because I think there's certain element of realism I want to take into the aging experiment, too. So, I mean, I could go in a purist, and I think there's nothing wrong with doing a purist type thing. But most of the time, you are doing other things when you smoke this. And if I was scoring this, I probably would be like, I use the Jose Blanco tonic water is what I use, is what I tend to do when I'm reviewing a cigar and scoring it.
Yeah. I usually do water, sometimes unflavored mineral water, soda, something like that.
Yep.
But I think this also, you know, this also really, like you said, there's an element of realism that you're kind of putting into it. I haven't smoked anything today, so this is my first cigar of the day.
Yeah.
So I have no other tobacco kind of influencing it in that regard. I did bring in an array of. I know we're gonna smoke more tonight. I did bring in an array of cigars.
I think
I'm gonna let you pick. I'm gonna let you pick from.
Well, I picked something to kind of go with our closing topic tonight, which I think was appropriate. What I did, but I'll pick your cigar. Yeah. I'm impressed. I'm really
Jay and you are like brothers from another mother.
Oh, Jay's awesome, man.
Diet Coke and chocolate. This is how he cleanses his palate.
Yeah, absolutely. And here we go.
The official beverage of Cigar Coop Prime Time.
By the way, how many are we gonna talk about? At some point we're gonna talk about Saka Gate tonight, right? Or Woodchuck Gate. The Steve, I was gonna kill the woodchuck, not.
Dude, my
there is no way he was gonna kill that woodchuck.
I'm glad my wife's never met him, man. If she had been like friends on Facebook with him, she would have fucking lost her shit, dude.
He puts the cuddliest picture of a woodchuck up there, right? And he knew everyone was gonna be. Now, I don't think he knew people were gonna really insult him and really take stabs at him, but he knew everyone would say, "Oh, don't kill it," you know. And then I thought the whole thing was premeditated. I thought it was a great idea. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think he was going to kill the woodchuck. There was no way he was going to kill that woodchuck.
Yeah. No, I'd like to think not.
He had fun saying stuff. Well, why didn't he kill it before it went? Why didn't he kill it before he put the picture up? That was my – all you had to do is, man, get in the cage, blam, right? You're done. He didn't do that. Oop. That's why I'm calling Steve out on this. There's no way he was gonna. And here comes you could tag Steve. Yes, I don't think Steve was killing the woodchuck. I think he came up with a good idea to raise money and things like that. getting people involved, cool, yeah. But there was no way that Woodchuck was heading to the execution.
So what did he do with the extra money? Because he collected more than enough to quote unquote relocate it.
He donated it to the SPCA up there. And he was by the time he hit the he matched the money it took to get the Woodchuck taken away. So he did all good with it. I just think it was a whole marketing scheme to get people involved, create some attention. You know, he had some prizes and, you know, people wanted those cigars. People could care. I mean, I think people are animal lovers too. Don't get me wrong. How much are you going to give money to the SPCA of Merrimack, New Hampshire? I'm not sure. But no, I get people. Animal causes are very popular. But I just don't like, if he was going to kill that Woodchuck, he would have killed it before the picture went up on Facebook. And there wouldn't have been a picture on Facebook.
I'm grateful that he didn't kill the Woodchuck. I'm cringing to make sure my wife isn't watching this show right now.
If Mrs. DePlissy, we don't advocate. I'm not advocating that. My dad, right?
Thank you for stating that for the record.
Listen. We're gonna talk a little bit about something along this line, but on The Sopranos, Tony Soprano was the whole thing of the character is he treated animals better than people, and I can tell you, my dad. Don't get me wrong, he doesn't treat us bad. He treats us good. But man, when it comes to pets and animals, they're treated better. That's all I'm gonna say. He is and that's how my dad is. And when we watching that on TV with The Sopranos was like, oh my goodness, that's my dad.
Do you think it's a New York thing? Do you think it's a generational thing?
My dad's 75, so he's older than Gandolfini or the Sopranos character was. I think there's something about growing up, and people could correct me on this, right? You grow up in an urban area and you see things, right? But when you're around an animal, there's a peace and tranquility for the most part, especially like house pets. And I think that resonates with a lot of people. And I think that's the case with my dad.
Yeah, I think so too. Like my father certainly treated us incredibly well. He's a very loving man. But he loved animals.
Yeah.
When our last dog died a few years ago, like his health really took a nosedive, and he hasn't been near the same. Because I mean that dog gave him purpose, man. You know? Yeah.
Oh, I get that. Yeah, it does. And I think there's something about nurturing a pet too. Like when you nurture a human being, they eventually grow up and could eventually nurture you back. That's never gonna happen with a pet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do we wanna talk a little more about the cigar, or we wanna kinda start our next topic?
Let's start our next topic. I'm enjoying this cigar quite a bit.
Yeah. Well.
How's the construction holding up? Before mine, my ash is solid. The burn is good. I feel like it's kind of hanging on by a thread though. I feel like it's gonna fall off any second, so I might just ash it off.
Oh, my ash was good. My burn got a little wonky as I started digressing into the soccer talk. So, I wasn't really paying as much attention to it. But it's not. That's burning. It's not. There's a little meandering, but that's probably more. I wasn't. You know, you still have to give a burn some attention. My draw is fantastic on this cigar, and it's giving me a lot of smoke. So I got a little resistance on the draw, and it's giving me a lot of smoke production here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So, I mentioned we already had the giveaway for the Tabacalera USA Trinidad set. So again, if you want to get into that, you'll win the boombox, the band bank, and the domino set. All you have to do is comment on an experience you've had with a Trinidad cigar or a Trinidad cigar you may want to find. Non-Cuban, please. Hashtag it with Trinidad50. And it has to be on the coupe, Cigar Coupe page of this broadcast. All right. Topic tonight is cigar media, right? And Aaron and I spend a lot more time talking cigar media on the Thursday show. I mean, I would say we spend in our third segment probably 40% of our shows have been devoted in some way or form to cigar media. And the biggest question is, like, I get is, why do you talk about it, right? One is people want to hear it. All right, I don't care. There's some people say I don't want to hear it. People want to hear it. But the other thing is, it's the business that I'm in, and I want to talk about the business that I'm in. So, you know, why wouldn't I want to talk about the business that I'm in and how the trends are going with the business? So that's kind of like why I talk about it.
Well, I think it's also important to discuss cigar media contextually because, you know, it allows our audience to engage with us in that regard too. Like, so you say some people say, oh, I don't want to hear it, but then there are people who do want to hear it. And it's also a great feedback loop too, Coop, if you think about it, because, you know, if you talk more, if we digress into it and have an open discussion and are really candid and transparent about a lot of things, especially about the way that we operate as a media brand, you know, it's an excellent opportunity for our audience to engage with us so that we can understand our audience better too, and how we might be able to, you know, improve too. There are a lot of things philosophically that there's nothing, you're just not going to betray, you know? And when I say betray, that makes it sound like all doom and gloom. Like I'm talking about ethics. Ethics are, I think, are a whole different other context, a whole other different conversation. But there are certain philosophies of cigar media brands that, you know, have also obviously cultivated a certain type of consumer of it.
Yep.
And a loyal following because of the way you operate media. The way that I operate my media brand. Eric with Cigar Dojo, Charlie with Half Wheel, Ben with Stogie Review. You know, there's very distinct styles. And I'm actually really, you know, I was thinking about this before we kind of go into the first topic here, Coop. I was kind of thinking about a lot of the top cigar media brands are certainly the most popular and everything. And it's really interesting that there really aren't too many that are alike. They have some similarities, but I feel like that, I think that's why we get along well, you know, so well for the most part, like overwhelmingly. We have a nice working relationship or friendships in a lot of cases, is because we've kind of all carved out our own little niche.
And that was what happened with Battle of the Bands. I thought there was six different brands in that contest. And I joked about Kevin being an accessory company with Cigar Prop. He is, but he does have a media component. I'm not saying he didn't. So it was interesting, but you know, you're right. We all bring, like you talked to Ben the other night. Ben was the pioneer of videos reviews at the trade show. Ben and his team, which was Brian Hewitt and Jerry Cruz at the time, who was with them beforehand, those guys did it. They were the first ones to do it. You know, you could say Dojo was maybe the first to take it live to a level. Like he's been doing it live now for the past couple of years. So, you know, but everyone, you know, Dojo's got a community, right? Brian Glynn comes at it. He'll review the cigar and he's not really interested in the company business, you know, the industry talk, you know, that's not, you know, that's Cigar Obsession. So everyone's got a different thing. Your show is different. You know, you take a very human aspect with also Fumar Takes that I don't think any other show has done, you know, so it's a very unique show you got. We all do something. We don't want, like the biggest question we get is why don't you take audience questions throughout the whole show? It's because Dojo and Cigar Federation already do it, right? So we don't want to copy what they're doing either. So we try to take a little and interact with the audience as much as possible. But right, they're all different. Everyone brings something different. It's when we see someone copying, it's when we kind of get a little more concerned.
Yeah, like, I mean, the people add different elements to it. Like Dojo does this, and actually I think Matt does a really good job on How About That Cigars. He actually pulls comment and posts them, like, during the show. Dojo does that as well, but I really like Matt's style on how he does that. And I really dig the community aspect of Dojo. Like we have our core audience, yep. And we have our same, like we have some really great viewers that tune in absolutely every week. You know, we were talking about Jay Davis earlier. Jay does that. You know, Tyler Jeffries, Big Scott.
Big Scott. You know, Alan Rubin.
Doesn't even. Alan Rubin.
Yeah.
You know, we bust Alan's balls all the time
but it just makes it so easy. We do, and I believe me, there's a lot of ball busting on Alan, but we appreciate the time he takes to watch our show and actually give the critiques as well. A lot of these people will critique our show, and it's important to get that critique feedback.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. That kind of brings full circle to my point is that I think it's important to have. You know, you can argue or not, like, you know, how frequent the discussion needs to happen. But I think it's an important discussion to have because I think it keeps us all in check.
Yep.
And has a degree of transparency about what we're trying to accomplish and what we can be better at, frankly. Yep. That's something that we've actually had a discussion on too, is like getting better. And I'm kind of derailing it, Coop, and I apologize.
Yep.
But getting better at your craft, like, you know, I made the comment the other day when you and I were talking privately about like how, like, if you look back at our first, show, Chris Gomez is tuning in all the way from Hawaii.
Hey, Chris.
But if you look back at some of our first shows and stuff, like I've gone back and listened to a couple of them and they're good.
But we're
better now. Like there's just no way to say, and that's the way it should be. You know, God forbid, you know, we would hate to go the opposite direction.
Yeah. I mean, with my old podcast, Stogie Geeks, I think we did a very good production. I think there were some shows that were better than others. At least when I was there, I thought we put on a good product. I think when I started the new shows, it didn't take long. I think we didn't have quite the production budget that show had. But I think we've done pretty well, and I'd like to think right now we're eons ahead of where I was when I left that show. So, and I thought we were doing a good job when I left that show. So, there's always room for improvement. You know, I'll come to you and say, Bear, I fucking laid an egg on this show. I've told you that. I've told Aaron that. I said I've laid an egg. I go, there's shows you'd be surprised that people loved that I thought I was awful that night. You know, and that's people don't realize it, but I've told Bear that a lot of times. You know, hey, I gotta fix this, fix that. Yeah.
Well, you did a show when you were fighting a blood infection, and you thought you did terrible that night, man. You were awesome.
But when I watched that show, I knew I was sick. Holy cow! Yeah, that was my Willis Reed. That was my Willis Reed. Imus with the collapsed lung, and me with the blood infection doing a show.
Well, you did, you know, we made it through. We had Omar back on.
Yeah.
And you weren't sick, and you didn't get sick after that, you know.
Oh.
Missed a worldwide pandemic too. I mean, so heck yeah, man, bring it on.
Yeah, no. So I think, you know, even when I look at El Osu Fumar takes, where you've come, now you're getting up to 140 of these things, right? And the good news is you're getting better. Like, we should be getting better with this, not getting worse. Now, I'm not going to start naming. There are podcasts that I've seen that are getting worse, unfortunately, and you got to worry about some of them. But I would hope that they could turn it around.
Yeah, because I think it's all for the better. That's what we're trying to accomplish as an industry, is we just want to make things better. We want to bring unique content. We want to bring a different perspective. We want to bring as much information to our audience as possible, because, and this is something I say on my show all the time, and I realize how fortunate I am to talk to the people that I get to talk to on a weekly basis. I mean, it's pretty, you know, the list is long at this point. It's going to be a 440 takes on Sunday, and it's long and distinguished, man. I've had some pretty amazing people that I've gotten to talk to. And I mean, even if you were to rank them, you know, in order of like significance or context or something, like the person that's at the very bottom, which, you know, I'm not going to begin to even think about who's in that, what that order is, but the person that's at the bottom of the list has a huge impact on the industry today. I mean, that's the power of some of these shows and the ability to talk to some of these folks is, you know, the person at the very bottom of the list is someone that drastically impacts the direction of our industry. That's the lowest part of the bar.
When you say lowest, I mean, you're talking about numbers, right?
Like, no, like numbers are just significance. Like I said, like I wouldn't want to dare first of all, it would be a daunting task, but right. I wouldn't want to dare try to insult anyone by saying, oh, this was my most important guest or my most significant guest. Right. And you were my least significant guest. Like, but again, if someone was to take like a third party was able to look at my guest list and like rank them somehow, it doesn't really matter how the end of that list ends. That person still has had or is continuing to have a significant impact on the industry.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That's pretty impressive. And the same could be said about your show, Coop. That's what I'm saying. Like,
oh yeah, no, I think you could probably apply that to most shows. You know, when we get into what is cigar media, right? This is where Aaron and I have been sort of critical, right? So I look at what I'm going to say is from the Cigar Coop end is I'm in the media business. Okay. So what I develop is content, whether it's a written content or whether it is podcast. That is my primary source of revenue for the business. You have other brands that do media, but they're not, I'd say media business is not their primary thing. I mean, you look at Cigar Authority, they put on a very good product, but that Dave Two Guys is the big entity there. Cigar right. Prop, he's selling accessories. He's built a media component. Again, he hasn't done a bad job with that, but there's a difference. I can say the same with KMA Talk Radio, you know, with Abe. Same thing. So
Cigar Hustlers Podcast.
Cigar Hustlers Podcast, right? Some have done a very effective job at that. Then you get some. Then you get some. I'm not sure what that lane is, right? So I kind of like Dojo. I think is a potpourri of things. Like I think he is some stuff. There's media content he builds. He sells some cigars, and he's got a community. So I mean, I think it's kind of a hybrid he's got there. But again, I look at myself. I call myself the purist here, just because my business is not. I'm not looking to do anything else but do content, and I'm protective of that. And I'd say Yellow, so Fumar Takes, for the most part right now, I would say it's in the same category as well as developing palettes.
Yeah, and I think that's certainly the case. What I really like about what Aaron's doing specifically on developing palettes is building out this arm under his podcast, you know, umbrella, if you will, of, you know, the spirit pairing and joining the spirits world with the cigar world in a really unique fashion. Like, you know, Cigar Federation sharing our pairings was the very first one to be able to do that kind of concept and really kind of really is. And that show continues to dominate. It's fantastic what those guys do. But Aaron's kind of taken that a step further with kind of not just sharing, you know, but also bringing us into that world with getting some of those folks
I think that, I don't want to put words in Aaron's mouth, I think that was always his vision too. Like, that's why he didn't call himself Cigar Palettes. It was developing palettes, where I think that was always the intent of what they were going to do. I think it turned out a little different because the partnership, I think, with Corona has been fantastic for them because Jeff's got a lot of connections and it's been a great platform to do that. So yeah, I think they've done it all that, like, we're doing it here with the music show. That's a very different animal. And that's a brand that's like my pet project right now over the past year, and it's a different show. In fact, Dave is constantly a guy who wants to improve. Which, so, I mean, just like all you guys, but Dave's really into, like, and Dave and I don't have the advantage of talking as much, so we have Zoom talks, like, every other week now. So, you know, there's different types of cigar media, though. I came up with, like, four types. Blog, right? Video, which is the YouTubers, right? Mm-hmm. Podcast, which is what we do, and social, which are people who may either have communities or they manage groups. And I look at those are the four forms that they do it with. Did I miss anything?
No, I think that sums it up pretty well. So you got blogs, so websites, vlogs, which is like YouTube, so video right. component, podcasting, which we do, which is video and audio, and then social media, so like, you know, a social media community or group.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's pretty fair.
The one that started, I think the first, believe it or not, wasn't the social media piece as much as the blogs, right? The blog became the one. I mean, when I started in 2010, we were called the bloggers. That's what we right. were referred to. And it was a derogatory word. Don't let anyone kid you. I hated the word, right? But it was it
still
was
hate the word.
I still hate the word. I'll talk about that in a second. Oh, those damn bloggers. I mean, those bloggers want the free samples, which is true. It was an easy way to publish, right? It's at low cost, very low cost you could start out with. As you grow, things change. But you need more industrial strength, you know, hosting, but you could start a Blogspot, or a free WordPress or Tumblr site, for free. And it gave you the ability to become a publisher. And I look at blogging. Here's what I look at blogging. It's a very agile way to get content out, right? It's very agile, right? It's meant to be a one man show. I felt I got away from blogging as I started to put more rigorous processes in. And yeah, even though I'm using a WordPress site, I don't consider by any means what Cigar Coop is a blogger. There are blog components out there that I have that are more agile. But for the most part, I think when you start to build these processes around it, whether it's proofreading, publishing schedules, you know, et cetera, that's where I think it kind of moves away from blogging.
Oh, great question. Oh, great point. So great question from the chat, Coop. So what category do companies like Cigar Business, Tobacco Business, Cigar Journal, and Aficionado fall into? Yeah.
So
print publication. So print publication.
Yeah, we should have said print publication. Good call there.
Good call, Chris. Yeah, great call.
Good call. Let me make this really clear. This is very much a print media business. Okay? The cigar industry is print media centric. And I think they have gotten better at embracing online media. I mean, certainly we have a lot of sponsors between all of us, but I still think that they have not been able to look at the shelf talkers. Aaron and I have talked about this 100 times. Look at the shelf talkers. Cigar Aficionado first, the other print publication second, then maybe Half Wheel, then maybe Coop and the others. That's how it's been. And we're never going to change that in my lifetime.
Well, it's just so ingrained. I mean, like at the same time, like, you know, like, you know, I mean, cigar companies, I mean, cherish that Cigar Aficionado rating. They'll throw that in packaging. They'll throw that in their marketing pieces and their ads that they post and even in competing magazines. Like, you know, if you look up an ad, if you look at an ad because of like, you know, Padron or Arturo Fuente and say something like Cigar Press or, you know, Cigar Journal or something like that, they're going to post in their advertisement their Cigar Aficionado scores.
They will.
It's that much ingrained into the, you know, I guess into the methodology of cigar company marketing is to really, you know, brag about those. Like one of the rare times that I ever see a very inclusive list of rankings was a ad for the Gran Habano Blue and Green. That George Rico posted in the what's the PCA magazine?
PCA, the magazine.
PCA,
The magazine.
So he had it posted, and he had the full page advertisement over the Blue and Green, and on it were all the scores that Blue and Green had accomplished. Well, not all, but a very inclusive list of scores that the Blue and Green had received from media outlets, including yours, Coop, and including the review that I wrote for Dojo, and a bunch of others as well. So it was not just media. It was not just print publication. I mean, he had listed all the scores. I mean, he was bragging about those, you know, yep. as he should be. So, it was, you know, that was probably one of the most comprehensive or inclusive, I'll say it that way, most inclusive use of that technique that you see in advertisements.
Very interesting. Yeah. You know, and Ben Lee talked about this on Sunday. And I'll be sure to put a link to this show because it was an important show. It was a really good show. Ben talked about how he put the numeric scores in under feedback that he got from manufacturers. I did the same thing. I didn't have scores till 2012 on Coop. And it was the same thing. We got asked for it. It got asked enough and I put it in. Like I said, that's always the joke is that no one cares about cigar scores or reviews. They do. They absolutely do. And the best part is when people mention it, it's great content for my brands. Because I talk about the media and I call bullshit on it every time. Right? So that's kind of like my thing with that. But yeah, no, that's a good point. You know, and we're gonna talk about scoring too. But do you think, like, are there sites out there, Bear, that you consider, like, pure blogs?
Yeah. There's a few. I mean, probably the most notable one is probably Half Wheel. I mean, Half Wheel does very, very little video content.
But are they in the category that I say processes around it where they're not really a blog, they're an online publication?
Yeah. But again, I want to be careful here because I don't necessarily while you take offense to the term blogger and I certainly take the offense to the term blogger because I'm not one.
Right.
You know, I want to be very careful about saying that these are what would be defined as blogs, but you know, by the definition that we've established, I think that they are because they don't necessarily have different components of it. You know, like I think, you know, someone like, you know, Tor Campbell.
Yeah.
You know, Tiny Tim. You know,
I would look at that. I look at a blog, like I said, they don't have the processes right now. I want to be careful where I'm saying that is not a negative, right? There are people who have been very, like Cigar Craig has been very successful for a long time. He's had I want to say he's around 12 or 13 years. He's a pure blog in my book. That's a pure cigar blog. And he's really good at it. So that doesn't mean he is that is not like I said. So I'm not saying that this is a negative. I think there is a difference. It's like what Skip says, you know, brand versus manufacturer. I think there's a difference, and both have certainly a good place, is what I'm saying in the media world.
Yeah, like and Myron's kind of like that too, right?
Myron's like that. I even think Cigar Authority's very blog like. Barry's always been in that blog, less agile category, kind of a little more New Hampshire specific, what they do. They do some news and they do reviews, but I think they operate the website very much like a blog. I think their podcast is a different story. Their podcast is a very heavy production podcast.
What about Cigar Advisor?
Cigar Advisor falls into the category of a publication where it's not the primary business isn't to produce content, it's to promote the brand, which is famous. The content's good though, right?
Yeah.
Would anyone say that? I would say their content is very good. So again, you know, Scar, you know, you could certainly can be done, is what I said. You know, Cigar Advisor is probably one of the better ones that they've done. In terms of written content for a cigar company.
I want to put a pin in this because I know we're defining these categories, but right. Alan Ruman just brought up a really good point. He was commenting on something that Jay said about commenting about how you know, cigar aficionado. He doesn't necessarily appreciate their scoring system anymore because he feels that it's biased. And Alan was quick to point out that online media is just as biased. Their relationships affect their coverage.
We are going to get into that big time. Alan's 100% right on that. And we did a show, Aaron and I did a show where it was the Cigar Lounge Experience had a podcast, and they had some media guys on, and they started bringing up the whole sponsorship thing as being evil. And Aaron and I came back and said, no, there is this whole thing about relationships. The relationship piece is much more dangerous, I think, than the sponsorship piece. I think that's what we've seen. And we're going to get into that piece. Alan's 100% right on that. Like I said, Tabernacle Syndrome is evidence that when those cigars were reviewed in December, was there a cigar that could have been eligible that was suddenly bumped and didn't make the cut for people that year? That's where I kind of go back to that. I think, Barry, you have not operated like that with your end of the year. So I think you've been very, very objective with that. Same with Aaron. I've tried to be. Yeah, Aaron tries to get the stuff in for the year as much as possible.
I expanded mine to a year and a half window. You know, and it's, you know, it's biased in the sense of it has to do, it's narrowed by access. A big component of my criteria is frequency of my returning to that cigar. I smoke a lot of cigars. A lot of different types of cigars. And so when I was coming up with my criteria, I was like, well, how can I say one cigar is better than the other without some of that bias creeping in? I said, well, you know, it's biased in the sense that it is, but I have, you know, and I have a limited, as an amazing selection as Michael's is, and an amazing selection that I have available to me with neighboring brick and mortars, my purview is still narrow, you know, however you want to describe it. Yeah. Very narrow, some sort of narrow. It's narrow, you know, it just is. It's already skewed because of the context of which I'm talking about. So there's bias there because it's a narrow scope of access. And so there are cigars that I feel are better than the other, but because of, again, one of my key pieces of criteria being frequency, they don't necessarily place higher on the list.
Right.
You know, obviously how much I enjoyed the cigar is a key component to that. I can very much say that my number one cigars of the year for the past 3 years are cigars that I absolutely love. They're incredible. And I think that they're just amazing cigars. But that's not to say that some other cigars in top five, for example, you know, aren't necessarily competitive with that on that level of how good they are.
Yeah. No, I agree with you on that. There is, I just had another thought on that, but I lost it. So I'm sorry. It may come back to me.
So I think we were talking about just like, so the definition of like, you know, we're talking about the definition of the types of, so we've got print publication. Thank you, Chris, for bringing
up
blog, video component, casting, and social. So who would you define as heavy video? So Cigar Obsession, right?
You know, Cigar Obsession would be the one that comes to mind. Yes, he has a website, but his is entirely video. Is vlog based. Yeah, he's the best at production. Some may question his content, but I won't. And he takes his approach. He takes the cigar and he smokes it on the air, and he gives his thoughts. He's not doing a technical review or anything like that. He's like the total opposite of what developing palates is.
Right. So I think like there are some like really popular YouTubers, vloggers, video guys that have brand components aside from like Swanson with Cigars Daily is a great example of that. Right. He has his own store.
Right.
Oh my God, the name's escaping me. It's terrible. But Zeal Cigars is the same way.
Yeah.
But their YouTube channels are just, I mean, they are incredibly popular on YouTube. And like, if you combine, like, if you look at like, and that is the thing, if you look at like Cigar Coop's video traffic comparatively speaking to some of those guys, like it's lower in comparison, but when you factor in like the multidimensional aspect of what you do,
it's changed. Yeah. So
you'd be surprised. I think people would be surprised. They're like, you know, like, you know, the tens of thousands of subscribers for like Brian and Tim and Zeal Cigars, for example, like that actually gets flipped when you add in like the amount of influence that you have, for example, on the website piece too, in conjunction with podcasting.
Yep. I agree. No, I agree with you. I appreciate that. Yeah. That's very important. Like YouTube, for at least Cigar Coop, we put it out there. There's no cost to do it. It's the least traffic measure of all of our brands. So there's a Coop has a live component, which we do on Facebook, but the strongest component for the most part is the download piece from iTunes. And Coop's one of the only podcasts to put the video out on Podbean. Most of the podcasts only put the audio out there. I put the video out there. So that's another component that helps. Stogie Geeks puts the video out there as well. That's where I kind of got that from. So
who are some examples? Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead. You go.
So who are some examples of, excuse me. Whoa, wrong pipe. Who are some examples of podcasting only?
Podcast only. Cigar Hustler, who I put in that category. I think they're podcast only, right? Would you say that?
Yeah, because I don't even think they don't do a video component.
Oh, they do some stuff on YouTube, yeah.
Some stuff, but
Cigar Dave would fall into that now that he's a podcaster, right? So he's audio. KMA used to be that. Now they've gone video. Yeah, so there's I'm leaving one out. I know I'm leaving one out. Oh, Cigar Talk. There's a guy called Cigar Talk. He's podcast only. He's a guy out of Texas.
Mm-hmm. What about my brand? I do have video, obviously.
You do have video, but... I mean, but you're a podcast brand, right?
Yeah.
So
I mean that's how I categorize it.
Yeah, you're a podcast. You know, how about the cigars leans more podcast, right? But they have a website. You don't have a website.
But they have a website, yeah.
But you don't actually need a website to be a podcast because there's subscription mechanisms, there's Facebook Lives, there's YouTube. So there's other ways that you could certainly generate your business model with that. You know, Coop the podcast, like the original concept with Coop was we joined with Stogie Geeks to bring the two worlds together. And then after I left Stogie Geeks, I kind of had to build that arm back up again separately.
Right. Sultans of Smoke.
Sultans of Smoke's a good one, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah.
And, Tyler just brought up the Sultans of Smoke. Oh, he also brought up Hot Ticket.
Yeah, Hot Ticket. I thought that, yeah, Hot Ticket is probably another one, too. Because no one could ever find theirs. Like I know people are always looking for links sometimes of theirs. And you have to go to the content.
The Lounge Experience is the same way. They're a podcast, but they're not.
Well, one of the biggest.
I can't.
Yeah, they are. They're Instagram, aren't they?
It's mostly video.
Yeah, you know, I'll kind of be very blunt on this. One of the big disputes I had when I was with Stogie Geeks is they were very, very relying on that non-website subscription model, and they weren't about promoting the live show as much, and you could see that to this day. And I never understood that. Like I always thought we were leaving money off the table with that, you know. But Paul had built his security podcast up like that, so I kind of understood that, right? I don't think there's a cost to really have a live show, promote your live show, and then use the mechanisms later to do it. Video is expensive. That's the one thing else. Like, we all know video is expensive, right? So that's why I have the video on Podbean, because it's another source in case YouTube or Facebook wipe us out, right? So the stuff's out. You know, I have enough places where it's out there. But yeah, it's you know, I think, you know, like I said, video is expensive. So, you know, audio is a much less expensive way to do it.
Mm-hmm. So would the lounge experience fall into that last category, you think?
Social?
Are they more of a social media?
No, here's what I look at social. I look at, like, this Johnny Smokes Uncut guy who's doing stuff in his Facebook group. I look at what Quentin Nation's doing with promoting, and Sean Miles, where they've done promoting the smoke-in rooms. I put them into that social category, where they don't necessarily have brands, but they rely on the forum. They're not producing a show, per se. Like, TLE is producing a show, so that's why I don't put them into that category.
So, like, what Chris is doing with, you know, with his Daily Ash, you know, where he basically, you know, God love him, he creates free advertising for us. He promotes all of these brands. He promotes all of the events.
He promotes them all, yeah. Yeah,
that's a social media arm that he's using to connect with. He's creating an audience by engaging all of our audiences together. It's a really unique thing. Like, I really kind of think I
agree.
I really kind of dig it. And he's very receptive too. Like, when I wanted to add one of our shows on the Scott Coop Primetime Special Edition, I reached out to him. I said, "Hey, don't forget to add us to your Tuesday list." And since then, we've been on every Tuesday. And he digs out some random ass shit.
Right.
Like, stuff like, I'm like, how did he find that?
Yeah.
And he's able to promote it, which is really cool. Like, when I think of social media too, I think of, like, some of these larger groups like Cats or Cigar Cartel, which, by the way, I'm still banned from. So anyone from Cigar Cartel that wants to let me back in, I would love to be back in. So I don't know why. Even the administrators don't even know why I was banned. But if someone wants to let me in, that'd be great.
You have been banned.
Fat Ash, another one, right? Another social media community.
Yeah.
Strictly speaking.
So our social media community, yes, I would agree. McAuliffe certainly has built their arm on their – I mean, they are company expert that has built – like Dan said it on your show, they became a content company for a while. And did a tremendous job at producing content.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's another example of that. Could I give a pet peeve to social media for a second?
Sure. Fire away.
Why is it that media brands hashtag cigar aficionado on everything and don't hashtag their own thing on that? I never understood why I understand the hashtag for the cigar aficionado thing because it's a big hashtag. Right, I understand that, but put your own damn media thing in there.
That's exactly why.
I'll tell you why
I didn't do it for a while. That's exactly why, because there are more popular hashtags out there that generate more traffic.
I get it. Now, I will not put a cigar aficionado hashtag in there, and I don't care if it gives me less traffic. They're a competitor of mine, right? So I'm not doing that, right? Except when we do the Cigar Aficionado show, which we'll be doing in December again. That's the only time I'll do it. But I get it. There's a lot of traffic with that. Let me kind of jump to this one, Bear. And this kind of is along the lines. There's this notion of being an influencer. All right? Versus media. And this is where companies, they look at Cigar Coop sometimes as an influencer where they can promote their brand, right? And if anyone says that to me, I said, we're a bad fit for you because we're media. Now, when you're an influencer, your job is to, I think it's to positively influence, right? Now, while I don't try to negatively influence, there's cases that come up where sometimes I have to be critical. Case in point, the whole Avo fiasco last year. Right? So, and they were sponsor. Davidoff is a sponsor of mine, right? But I had to critique that, but I did it in a way, Bear, that I didn't damage Davidoff. I think when we talked about it, you'll remember my words were, it was a bad decision that was made. I don't think there was a malintent with the Avo thing, right? I just think it was a bad, there was a bad choice made there. And I said it, you know, but, you know, so I think it's important to know that I see media, I see companies sometimes, they just go, and not company, media brands, they go a little overboard, right? Because I think they're pressured into being influencers sometimes. And like I said, we'll get into sponsors in a second. I think you have responsibilities as a sponsor, right? But that doesn't guarantee everything's going to be roses either. In terms of reviews, in terms of news or feedback or things like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the influencer is in a lot of ways, you know, they kind of muddy the waters, and I don't mean that to be disparaging. But like you said, a lot of cigar manufacturers will confuse cigar media with that influencer component too. And don't get me wrong, I mean we are influencers in our own right. You know, we do influence our own audience with various content and the way that we present it and stuff. But the way I think that you're trying to define it is an influencer is there for promotion only. Like, you know, they're not there to necessarily ask the tough questions. They're not there necessarily to stir the pot. They're not there necessarily to find the story within the story. They're simply there to just, like, you know, just promote. I mean, that's what an influencer does, just promote.
Yeah.
And promotion is good. You know, promotion is good. Promotion is advertising. Promotion is awareness. It's not a disparaging comment. It's just different. There is a defining difference between an influencer and, you know, these other media components that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, influencer is even different than what, you know, social media communities do by a long shot.
They're very different. Yeah.
You know, Cigar Aficionado has, you know, print publication influences people through their advertising, but their content, I mean, one could argue is not even a majority of their content's not even cigar related.
Yep.
I mean, it's heavily influenced, but I would wager to say, I mean, it's probably close to 50-50, you know, 50% non-cigar related, 50% cigar related content in their magazine. They do golf and resort. It's a lifestyle magazine, you know. That's what they say.
I mean, Cigar Coop was always pure cigars until Jukebox came into the fold. And what we made the decision is we put the music content, except for the podcast, which we put on the Coop site. The music content's going to a Cigar Jukebox website, and that's what we've made that decision to keep that as like a separate brand with a little overlap with the podcast is what we've done. With that. Hey, can I just address this question from Jay?
Yeah.
Okay. So Jay was asking the question on, do you feel it was good for media to participate in Battle of the Bands? Charlie chose not to do it because of the appearance of it. I don't know what Charlie did. As a retailer, he didn't like the traffic going to a competitor that is so large. That being said, he thought it was a cool process. But what are your thoughts about appearing independent aligning with Abe? Well, first of all, let me address that. I am aligned with Abe. Okay, and it's going to get into the next thing with strategic partner. I'm part of the KMA brand. I contribute to that. So there is already a relationship I have with Abe. I was a little concerned with that, but that being said, there's no secret about that, you know. Look, I entered that contest not like – some people really wanted to win that contest. I said from the beginning I wasn't going to win it. I didn't win it. But it gave me an opportunity – to do two things. It gave me an opportunity to three things. One is obviously I could do something back for Abe, right? The second thing is it gave me a chance to promote the Coop brand, which I can't advertise, right, as much, right? This was free advertising I got, right? And the third thing is it gave me, this is what I didn't expect, it gave me a chance to connect with people in a way I hadn't connected with them before, just on the feedback from the packs.
Right.
So was I independent? Absolutely, because I didn't play any games with what I did with this contest, okay? I was, Brian Glenn and I were the ones who didn't, we didn't do giveaways, we didn't bribe people, right? With merchandise for buying something. The contest I'm doing right now is a post contest where you didn't have to buy anything to do that, right? But why am I doing it? Because I got a boost in the Coop name, and now here's a chance to continue that boost after the contest is over and give something back to the to everyone who supported me. So I don't regret doing that. I hate that it didn't hurt. It hurts guys like Jay, and maybe there's things we could do with Jay to kind of prop him up certainly on some things as well. I don't regret that decision. I don't feel it tarnished my independent. Like, I was bitching about the discounts that were offered to Abe. I bitched very vocally, and I came up on the Monday show. I felt we should have offered the discounts because there was a lot of reasons. One, there were a lot of reasons, but also there's another thing I'll say on the Coop site. I don't allow discount codes on the Coop site for a reason. Because I want to protect these guys, and people might say I'm wrong. I want to protect these guys who are selling stuff at MSRP. So I do not. I will in my contract. If you're a retailer, you do not get to put the discount code. And I'll say another thing. If you notice, I never promoted the discount code. People knew it was out there, but I did not do that out of respect to the other guys out there.
Yeah. What I would say to Jay is, I think Jay has an incredible opportunity because I think Jay is very plugged into media.
He is.
He honestly could do his own spinoff of it too. I know he doesn't, he's not necessarily on the internet as much as, he doesn't have an internet store, for example.
Right.
But he has a very prominent store in the DFW area. I mean, he's got a very loyal customer base, and he is very unique in that regard. We have a lot of retailers that tune into this show.
Yeah.
But Jay's one of those guys that he tunes into a lot. He is very he consumes a lot of cigar media because he wants to know. I don't want to put words in Jay's mouth, but from my perspective and my understanding and my relationship with Jay, it seems like he enjoys it. I think that's clear and evident. But I think that the fact that he could he's looking for for opportunities to grow his brand too. I think he's doing it out of pure enjoyment, but I think he's also looking for, insight into how to make, Blue Smoke a better, better experience.
Yeah.
Promote his own brand.
Absolutely.
And I think I applaud him for that.
Yeah.
So I think Jay's in a very unique position to where, and some of other audience members who are retailers too. Tyler's another guy.
We have a lot of retailers.
A lot of them. A lot of retailers tune in.
Yeah, the Coop audience is very much an industry audience too. And that's why I went back. It gave me a chance to connect with more consumers this way, which was very important to me. And oh, by the way, when I mentioned these other tactics that people used, that was their choice. They didn't break any rules. I just wasn't going to do that because my goal was to promote the Coop brand on this thing. That was and I said that from the very beginning. And by the way, we didn't finish very well in this competition. So we finished towards the bottom, but that's okay because my traffic was up that month. I've connected with so many new people. We've gotten new people reading the website because of that. And I can tell you that. So I'm happy. I'm very happy with it. I wouldn't change it, but Bear, to kind of go back. So I wanted to address that question here because there are relationships that Cigar Media has, right? And I think this plays into that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So there are what we call strategic partners, what I call strategic partners, and then there's sponsors, right? So I would say most media brands have strategic partners, okay? And they're not people who pay for advertising, but they have a business relationship with them. Where it's very easy to pick the phone up. Sometimes they'll pick your brain for advice. I have ones where, frankly, I have arrangements where I get some news before everyone else, right? I don't try to block anyone from that, right? I usually discourage that. And I have some I know just in general, they've just been very supportive. And I've said to you that some of them I don't want to convert to sponsors because it's not good. It's because I have such a good relationship because sponsors do change things. And we'll get to that for a second. I mean, I think I think every media brand has that. We'll get into when it goes too far. There is a point where it goes too far.
Yeah, I mean, I think having strategic partners and relationships is very important. Relationships is the key to this business, period.
You have to.
It's the key to, the relationships in this business, it's key to any fabric of it. It's key to retailers.
Yeah.
You know, it's key for, because ultimately, it all boils down to the consumer, right? It all boils down, we're all aiming for essentially the same thing. We want more consumers.
Yeah.
We want more consumers in our audience. The cigar retailers want more consumers so that they can grow their brand and their business. And relationships definitely factor into that.
Right.
Like, you know, for the sake of argument, we'll just use Perdomo as a point just because I'm staring at the black studios behind you there. You know, Perdomo's been a very strategic partner for Michael's Tobacco Viewers for a long time.
Sure.
You know, Mike and Nick have a personal relationship that goes back years, and you know they've done a lot of good for each other. You know, it's been a great partnership, you know, over the years, and you know. But without that partnership, you know, would Michael's carry Perdomo? Probably.
Right.
Would it do as well or would it be as a high profile, you know, brand in the Michael's humidor? No. And I feel comfortable talking on behalf of Mike for that, but it has to do with the relationship. You know, it's been an equally benefiting relationship. You know, so to tie it back into cigar media, for example, you know, I've been able to cultivate some really amazing relationships and friendships with people in the industry that have given me great opportunities as well. So like, you know, for example, you know, later in a couple of weeks, I'll be interviewing George Rami of the Camacho.
Right.
Right. Well, I didn't know George. I don't know George. I still don't know George. I've actually never met. Actually, that's not true. I've met him.
He's once. A great guy. He's a great guy. I've met him.
But that relationship and that opportunity to have an interview with him was fostered through a relationship that I've built with his colleague, Klaus Kellner.
Yep.
And Klaus has been a great partner to have for my show because he's on my show every year. He actually approaches me about coming on. I approached him about the very first appearance, but since then he's actually come to me each time. He's like, "Hey, it's about time to do our show." And it's so exciting to have that kind of relationship with him where we talk often and we talk about not just Davidoff, but each other's families. And we have a personal friendship on the side. But it's been benefiting because it's not just about strictly what Klaus is doing for Davidoff. You know, he's introduced me to someone like George who can talk. Yeah, Camacho is under the Davidoff portfolio, and you can say that if you will, but that wouldn't have happened.
Yep.
Without that relationship.
Totally.
You know, we're going to be having an interview later this year that is a direct result of fostering a lot of relationships and a lot of strategy that came into place so that we could have that opportunity. And I know you hate teases, Coop. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to do that. But it just goes to show you there you have to have relationships in order for it to work. And the better the relationship, the more that it's actually fostered. And it also has fostered repairing of relationships.
Oh, too. You know of a good one that got repaired. I had a bad one that was repaired because someone went to a company. I really don't want to say it because it's water under the bridge. But absolutely, there was someone who I was close to went to this other company where I had as bad a relationship as I had with any company, and that has been repaired. That was repaired. Mm-hmm. So it's very important. We need those relationships, right? Now, there's a point where we get asked, to do better, okay, with what we're doing with the content, okay? And when you get better, when you want to get better, that leads to costs. And the costs have, someone has to pay it, whether it's me paying it, whether it's the audience paying it, or whether it's cigar companies paying it. I don't want to go broke. I don't want to pass this to the audience. I go to the cigar companies. And that's where we have to have sponsor relationships. And sponsors are absolutely necessary to have. Now, I think there's one thing that you have when you have a sponsor relationship. I don't think necessarily you have to be roses all the time, okay? But I think you have to be respectful to, you have to respect the relationship to some extent. That doesn't mean you're going to get a good score all the time. So that's the first thing I talk about is, you know, if you're going to become a sponsor, don't think you're buying scores here. You know, and I'm going to put, you know, it's just, that's the real, or you're going to get into your list. We appreciate the thing that comes in, but sponsors are absolutely necessary. And we can't survive without them. We can't, because some, otherwise, if you want us to have a crappy product, we'll have a crappy product. Some people have chosen to go Patreon route. I get that. And some people have just have unlimited funds and they can do it too. So, but that's, sponsors are important with that. You have to treat sponsors with, like I said, respect the sponsor. You should respect everybody, but you want to respect that relationship. But at the same time, you can't show favoritism to it either. The problem is I have so many sponsors now that they make up the top 10. It's just that we've accumulated a lot of companies too with that bear. That's a big problem in a way, because I got companies now that are producing great cigars with sponsors.
Well, yeah, I mean, you actually were very candid with when a sponsor landed the top spot on your top 25 list.
Yeah.
You know, and top 30 list. So when, and you were very candid with that, you were very reflective on it. And, but you said you had honestly had to respect, you also had to respect your process too. And it just happened to be that particular cigar landed the top spot of that year.
And oh, by the way, everyone smoked that cigar for the most part didn't say I blew it. You know, a lot of people said I did pretty good with it.
It was in my top 10. That cigar was in my top 10. Mm-hmm. You know, another example is, strategic relationships, but never having never paid you a dime, but you like their cigars and they perform well consistently in your top 30 is Crux.
Crux made it. Crux has made it 4 years in a row. Espinosa's made it 7 years in a row, and I've never gotten a sponsor dime from them. I mean, they just, do I have a strategic relationship? I do. I'm not going to say I don't, but those cigars could miss the top 30 this year. And I hope everything would stay the same.
Yeah. And I have my whole show was created on the platform of another cigar company, which was, you know, was Espinosa, was La Zona Palooza. My brand launched at La Zona Palooza 3 years ago.
Right.
And it got started, there. And, you know, La Zona and, you know, Espinosa and La Zona companies have appeared on my show regularly over the course of 3 years. And that's because, you know, again, of the relationship piece. Yes. But, and I've always told Tim Wong, who is my very first take, that Tim's got the anniversary show as long as he wants it, and as long as he's able to make it, it'll always be his. And that's out of respect for him, what he gave me. He's what he helped me start. He was the very first take.
Yeah. We do the same thing here. I mean, we have John Carney does the Super Bowl show with us every year. We have Hector and Miguel, do the baseball shows with us. And they have those spots for as long as they want them. We're going to probably add, you know, Phil Schmitz, who's not a cigar guy. He does the indie show. That's, you know, but we've talked about some other things we may do with these shows down the road. But yeah, we have those relationships. We cultivate them, but
And there's another example. There's two more companies, La Florida Minicana and Crowned Heads, that have never given you a dime.
No, right. And I'm not looking for it either. You know, there are companies, you know, if they want to, we're here for them. Then we have to kind of go through what the program means with that. And, you know, the thing is, here's the thing. You never get on the air and you never trash a sponsor. You shouldn't trash anybody, right? You should be respectful, right? But, you know, if you're going to trash a sponsor, they should know it's coming. You know, and we, you know, there's examples that we know of that's happened with that lately.
Yeah, well, I think one of the most prominent examples of that was, you know, Cigar Aficionado's piece on, you know, Altria that raked raked Nat Sherman over the coals.
Totally.
And caused that whole hullabaloo, right? And that was incredibly damaging to the business relationship and frankly speaking to the personal relationships too. I don't want to speak for parties involved necessarily, but it had to have, you know, affected the personal relationships involved there. And so, you know, you and I were actually having this discussion off air. And so, like, you know, I've been on record as to one of the cigars that I've reviewed and I've liked the least in my time. Again, small sample size. I've not reviewed anywhere near in the spectrum amount of cigars that you've reviewed, but one of my lowest rated cigars that I've ever reviewed is the CAO Sessions. And if I ever had the opportunity to interview Rick Rodriguez and he was to ask me directly, or if we were talking about that cigar specifically, you know, I would be truthful with him. It didn't hit my palate, Rick. I did not enjoy that cigar, but I wouldn't say, oh, that was the worst piece of shit that you've ever put out. Like, how could you release that? I mean, that's just unnecessary. Like, you know, and even if Rick wasn't sitting across from me, it's just unnecessary to sit there and talk about, like, you know, talk about it in such a negative regard, you know, to me. You know, it doesn't do anything for the audience. It certainly doesn't do anything for the relationship. And it's just unnecessary to do. But again, to that same point too, you have to have a certain level of integrity and be honest about certain things. And I would certainly be honest with Rick if I was ever to have the opportunity to interview him. And that if that subject came up, but I certainly wouldn't seek it out necessarily.
Yeah.
Unless it actually had, you know, context. That cigar is a couple years old now, and it's not really relevant if I was to interview Rick right now. But if he asked me about it, then I'd have to be honest.
Aaron and I didn't hit it in the interview because there was so much we covered in that interview with him. So we thought about hitting it if he brought it up, we were gonna be honest with the feedback. But it didn't, you know, there was so much we hit. There was a big story we did with Rick that night. I should mention RomaCraft too. They've been really good. I mean, I know his companies I'm leaving out, but RomaCraft's been, like, anytime we've asked Skip to come on, he's come on. You know, he's been, you know, incredibly supportive of us. He'll be critical of us too, and that's okay. But yeah, I want to mention him as well, because if I don't, he'll get mad at me. But that's true. It's very true. He's been good about that.
Hey Coop, when we get I'm gonna take a quick break real quick. When we get back, I think we should talk about the cigar again, because I'm wrapping mine up.
Yeah, so why don't we do that? And I'll just kind of mention the contest and we'll go from there. All right. So while Bear is taking a well deserved break, I just want to mention the for people who haven't gone on the Trinidad contest, the Trinidad Spiritu prize pack. You get a mini boombox complete with a wireless phone charger and speaker. You get a domino set. Branded with the Trinidad Espiritu. And finally, you get the coolest thing is the band bank. It's a bank that you can put in your cigar bands. And it's great. You know, you put it in like a bank, and you can kind of put them all in there. Trinidad Band. So you get all three of these things. All you have to do is in the comments section of the Cigar Coop video, all you have to do is put a comment in on an experience you've had smoking a Trinidad cigar or a Trinidad cigar you want to try. Let's go non-Cuban, please. And hashtag it with Trinidad 50. Get on the Cigar Coop, and I'll pick one winner at random with that. So stay tuned on that. as far as that goes. So we have a big contest going on with that. And, of course, the Battle of the Bands contest going on as well. So get those contests, get those in there and certainly do that. While Bear is kind of taking a well-deserved break, let's kind of go through the calendar. And we have, I'll announce the next two shows, our Thursday shows, on the primetime show. And confirmed for October 8th, that's primetime episode 159, Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern. Oliver Nouveau of United Cigars is our special guest going there. So stay tuned. You'll have Oliver on that. We're going to be talking United Cigars. We'll be talking tacos and we'll be doing a special Thursday edition of One Must Go because Oliver is the architect behind that for the shows. And then I will, for the first time, announce this. We look like we have everything in place for this. Primetime episode 160 will be Jeremiah Mirafell. The one and only Jeremiah Mirafell of him, Cameron Tobacco, Tobacco Broker. We're very honored to have him on the show as well. So really, really exciting shows that we have coming up on the next two primetime shows. We have a special edition coming later this month. We're still TBA on that, but there will be another special edition. And I'll mention one other thing. We will be on election night on special edition. Bear and I will be on election night. We will be going through the election returns. It will be the unpolitical election return show. And we've done a few. We did this with the mid-year elections. So we've done this a couple of times. We did it with the primaries earlier this year. Not political talk, but we'll be running down the results so you can smoke cigars and be there with us. I guess I just had a delivery here. It looks like I got a late night snack here. So I have a Big Mac that has been delivered to me. So I got a nice Big Mac, some extra fries. So I'm going to get real fat tonight because I didn't eat dinner. Got the McDonald's fries going on here. And some additional Diet Coke, I got the Diet Coke here as well. So big Diet Coke. So yeah, because you need a Diet Coke with McDonald's is what I'm going to say. So, as far as that goes, I'm going to hold off on eating the McDonald's until I'm done with the aging experiment. But Bear, I got breaking news. There was a McDonald's delivery here, but I'm going to hold off on this until
Big Mac.
Got a Big Mac. Yeah, I didn't eat dinner, so Timmy just basically put a late night McDonald's order in, and I just went through the schedule for some stuff. So,
beautiful.
So let's get back to the cigar, and then we have a couple more short points. We'll wrap up on the media piece because I think we hit most of the points already. Bear, so I'm down to the – I'm in the late part of the second third right now.
Yeah, I already took my label off. I'm wrapping mine up.
Yeah. I think this has been fantastic.
Yeah, the last third has kind of fallen off a little bit for me, to be honest. But I'm still enjoying the cigar.
It got – some of the rich coffee notes are starting to diminish, but – I'm thinking this is the best of the three I've had.
Absolutely.
Yeah. These are cigars that I think you, when you buy them, don't be afraid to age these long term.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid Definitely. To age these long term. But very impressed with it. I think it's my favorite of the three. And they're all really good. So, I mean, when we bought these and we lit them up, like, because we had just bought them like a couple of days, they were really good. They got better. And unlike the Le Carême, this one went up another level. Like this
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I think this one was like a 91, 92 on coupe. So it's probably more solid 92 right now, if I had to say it. But more, yeah, I would say it's, yeah, I don't know quite if it's 93 quality. But. I'm impressed with it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we want to say anything else on it? Do we want to?
I think this was a success. I think this was the best one so far. Overall.
Yeah. It was worth the year wait is what I'm getting at.
absolutely worth the year wait.
Yeah.
The last third falls off a little bit. I think you need to not, because I think that bitterness kind of creeps in a little bit. A
little bit of bitterness, yeah. I'm getting solid medium, so I think it lost a little edge on it over the time too. Like I thought maybe the other one was more medium plus, medium to full in strength and body. This one's kind of gone down a bit, you know, in terms of, and I expected that with a year of age, 14 months of age on it. Okay.
I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to disagree with you on that. I think it's still a medium plus.
You know, I'm thinking this is medium, but okay. I'm still taking this as a medium. What about strength, nicotine level? Would you say it's medium plus?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
I think it's a little short. Maybe I'll say, if I had to go 1 to 10, I'll say it's a 6 maybe. In strength and body. That's kind of how I would do it. Mm-hmm. On the higher end of medium. With medium being dead center. I'll say 6. It's been pretty consistent. It hasn't ramped up in intensity. Have you noticed anything with that? A little bitterness you're getting on it now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, the bitterness kind of, like, I think if you nurse it a little bit more towards the back, you can kind of cut that out a little bit.
Yeah. Why don't we, Bear, I want to get back to the media stuff. Okay. Why don't we do the next two segments, and then we can come back to the media stuff? Because I'm kind of, as long as we took the break, I figure let's just get them in. Does that sound okay to you?
Do the what? I'm sorry. I missed it.
Let's do One Must Go and the new segment, and then we'll come back to the media stuff.
Okay.
Are you okay with that?
Yes.
All right. So, of course, we're going to do and I mentioned we're going to do a special One Must Go on Thursday night when Oliver is on the show. But I want to mention this is our One Must Go segment. And One Must Go comes to you from United Cigars. United We Smoke, but One Must Go. Brought to you by United Cigars featuring La Gianna Habana and distributors of the Jose Dominguez, Bandolero, Garofalo, and the highly acclaimed Atabey and Byron. Buy United, smoke United, live United. Bear, I picked 3 TV shows tonight, all right? And one of these shows has to go off forever. No more reruns. No more broadcasting of it. And I picked 3 shows. All right, okay. Ready?
Fair enough.
Number 1 is The Honeymooners. Number 2 is Seinfeld. And number 3 is The Sopranos. One must go, Bear. What goes?
Well, this is pretty easy for me, Coop. And I'm about to start.
Oh, I can't wait for this.
Brush fire with this, okay? Really unique aspect on it, as far as I'm concerned. So, The Sopranos, I absolutely love. I think it's a great show. I watched the last couple seasons live. You know, I actually followed it the last couple seasons and would tune in each week because back then, watch. Mm-hmm. And then definitely gone through the series a couple of times. Great show.
Yeah.
I think it's some of cable TV's finest serial work. And there's a lot of great shows that cable television has put together over the years now. But The Sopranos, I think, is some of its finest work. So, interestingly enough, I have never watched an episode of The Honeymooners.
Yeah, you said that.
I've never watched it. I can't give you an opinion on whether or not I like it or not. I know that it's pretty iconic. Mm-hmm. And it has a very nice, what's the word I'm looking for? Serialized. What's the word I'm looking for, Coop? When you're syndication. Yeah, it's been syndicated quite a bit. So syndication. So This is absolutely, and then Seinfeld. Okay, so let's talk about Seinfeld contextually for a second. So Seinfeld kind of revolutionized, in a lot of ways, sitcom television. It was extremely popular over its lifetime. It's still extremely popular in syndication. It holds so many things inside pop culture. When you think about phrases like no more soup for you, or I was in a pool, or things like that, you know, there's so many things from that show have kind of been etched into pop culture and remain relevant to today, which is really interesting about it. Speaking personally, I absolutely abhor Seinfeld. I think it is the worst show ever. I don't get it. And everyone always says, well, I always say it's about nothing. We're like, well, that was the point. Well, they've achieved it because it was a show about nothing. It absolutely, in my mind, served no purpose. I didn't find it funny. I'm a fan of Jerry Seinfeld in stand-up. I think Jerry Seinfeld is hilarious. I thought the show was absolutely stupid. I didn't think it was funny. I didn't really get it. I've tried to watch it. I don't enjoy it at all. I think it's just terrible. And so this was an easy call for me. Seinfeld's got to go. And got to go with pleasure. I've never seen The Honeymooners, but God, it's got to be better than Seinfeld because Seinfeld's fucking awful.
So Bear, I don't agree with you 100% on this. I agree with you 1,000%. I share the same exact opinion as you. Seinfeld is the most overrated show. I never understood it. It doesn't hold a candle to The Honeymooners or The Sopranos. It was an easy choice for me on this one. And we're going to go down in flames together with this with everybody. I am
totally, okay.
I agree with you. I tried to watch it. I never thought it was funny. Right. I think Jerry Seinfeld annoys me like Chevy Chase annoys you. Okay. That's how bad I'm not a fan of his online comedy. Right. This is gonna start a shit show, right? And I'm looking at the comments, by the way. I apologize. I left the Tuesday Night Cigar Club. They do a great podcast. So we'll get to that. And I really apologize to Matt because they do a tremendous job, those guys. And I should have said them. But back to Seinfeld, right? The Honeymooners is so iconic, right? Bear, you have to go watch The Honeymooners. Okay, that's your assignment, okay, in the next few months. Get some Honeymooners. Okay. Find some Honeymooners reruns. It is an old show. You got to keep in mind it's a 50s show. But there – see, I grew up with The Honeymooners. The Honeymooners were widely syndicated in the 70s, right? So my parents watched those reruns. I started watching those reruns. Ralph Cramden, absolute greatest character ever. There's just some epic moments on that show. I never felt that there was that Seinfeld could come close in a comedy-wise. Sopranos is a different animal, more drama, more thriller with some comedy elements in it. Okay, so but I'm with you on this. This is not close. I mean, this is not close. This was an easy. I thought for sure you were gonna pick Seinfeld, right? And not pick Seinfeld. I think you pick maybe. I felt you picked The Honeymooners.
No, man, I've never seen an episode, and I can God, it's got to be better than Seinfeld.
Jay says Seinfeld must go. It's the most overrated. I mean, I know it's a popular show. I know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't dismiss its place in television history. You can't. Right. You can't dismiss its place in television history. You just can't. It's one of those things that I just don't understand why the hell it was so popular in the first place. Like I just don't get it. You know, none of the characters, you know, were well written. None of the characters resonated with me at all. I thought Jerry was bland in the. I think Jason Alexander is probably single-handedly the most annoying
actor,
person
in he's not funny.
History.
He's not funny.
He's not funny. The whole Costanza bit, like, listen, I'm not an attractive dude. I outkicked my coverage. I got lucky. I married up and I have a beautiful wife that loves me for some weird reason. But I got to tell you, it was totally unbelievable that he scored with all those chicks. I'm sorry. Like,
I'm not going to say I never watched it. I watched that finale. That was awful. That was an awful finale. I watched it. I'm not going to tell you that. It was awful. They go to jail.
No, it was beautiful. No, the finale is great, man. That's where they belong. That's where they belong.
Yeah. I mean, they couldn't. George Steinbrenner was the best thing about that show when he was on, maybe.
Okay. All right. Okay. First of all. Yeah. Okay. So did you see Alan's comment?
I'm a New Yorker. I'm a New Yorker, and my dad's Jewish, Alan.
Yeah, I was gonna say, boom.
Yeah. Trump so that. My dad's Trump Jewish. That. Trump that, Alan. My dad's Jewish, and I don't like it.
You're right. You're right. Yeah. You're right, Alan. Yeah. I'm Texan, and I'm not Jewish. I'm sorry. Yeah. You know what?
By the way, I really owe Matt Cade an apology because what he's done and he accomplished. I do apologize to him. His comment was funny though. You know, he said, and now you guys have easily dismissed Seinfeld. It's super easy for me to be okay with you easily dismissing the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast. Seinfeld is too genius, and Moonlighting broke way more ground than the Honeymooners. I agree with the Moonlighting piece. Not Honeymooners was a pioneer show, but Moonlight changed television a lot. He's right on that.
That's a fair point. Yeah, I've seen that show.
Yeah, yeah.
We forgot about the Tuesday night.
No, what he's done is incredible. I mean, that's a machine he's got, and it's good content. Folks, check it out. So
yeah, I've I also mentioned like the Bakersfield Gentleman too. That was something.
These guys are leaving out, and we're apologizing. There's a lot of good ones out there, and if we're leaving you out, you could call me out on it. We'll mention you guys.
Yeah, it's cruel.
Bear, you had a couple of substitutions in here. Okay. Mm-hmm. Replacement ideas. So talk about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of wanted to give us an idea of like shows that I've actually watched. So, you know, again, Honeymooners I've never seen, Seinfeld I absolutely hate. And, you know, here a list of shows that I actually really enjoyed over the years. And you probably noticed that, I think, you know, if you want to talk about iconic sitcoms, Cheers, you know.
I'm not a Cheers guy.
Cheers was a great show. It brought together – it really – what I loved about Cheers is Cheers personifies what a cigar lounge is, Coop, if you think about it.
It does.
It's a cast of characters that have no business being friends with each other.
Yeah. The problem with Cheers is Coach left, and then Shelley Long left, and the Frasier character I liked, and I do like Frasier a lot. So I'll give you – that was the other one.
Alan Rubin's still trying to defend Seinfeld. Dude, Alan, give it up, dude.
It's a terrible
fucking show.
give it up, Alan.
But, you know
– it's gone.
Inside of Cheers – developed a character that, you know, ended up being a character for basically 20 years. And I think, you know, and with Frasier, you know, so Kelsey Grammer plays Frasier Crane in Cheers. There's a spinoff. It's the most successful spinoff in television history. No one can argue that.
Frasier could be the most successful character in television history you can look at. You can make the argument.
Played the same character for 20 years of Frasier.
Yeah.
Love Frasier. I'm obsessed with it. My sister got me into it. My sister was obsessed with Frasier. That to me is a funny show. Those characters had depth to them. They weren't always good people. You know, right. Alan brought up the fact that you shouldn't let empathy for Seinfeld characters because they're petty and selfish. Niles and Frasier were petty and selfish all the fucking time, and they were funny while doing it. So I don't want to hear that bullshit. Right. Frasier brought you into a world that most people just can't identify with. This elitist upper echelon that most of us will never touch in any form and fashion. But they brought it down to a relevant scale to where you could actually relate to it.
I agree.
The amount of opera that was displayed in that television show over the span of its lifetime, over its 10 plus seasons – like the average person's not exposed to that, you know, classical music, science, and you know, psychology, you know, Frasier made psychology funny.
He did. He did, you know, and they brought the whole element of his family in.
And, you know, and he did. It was just awesome.
Yep.
So, and a couple of other shows that I really enjoyed, and like I said, you can notice a theme here, and they're all, because they're all written by the same man, Aaron Sorkin, who I just think is an absolute genius. Love Sports Night. Watched, it was two seasons, too short. Absolutely loved it. I thought the characters, Felicity Huffman, Josh Charles, Peter Krause, Joshua Malina, freaking, you know, Robert Guillamy, you know, incredible, incredible characters, incredibly well written. Could not believe it only lasted two seasons. It was a great show. And he also did West Wing, which I really enjoy as well. And Newsroom, which I also really enjoy too. Aaron Sorkin, I believe, is kind of like the John Grisham of television. You know, he really brings you into a world that, again, most people aren't going to be a part of. Like, people are never going to work at the White House. He brought you into the White House with West Wing. He brought you a newsroom with Sports Night and Newsroom. You know, each one of those shows you can watch and you instantly want to go work in that field. He didn't over-romanticize it, but he brought it so forward in consciousness that it just made for amazing television. The characters are incredibly well-written. They're incredibly deep. They're flawed. And they're, you know, to Alan's point from earlier, they're incredibly relatable. And then one of the longest shows, running shows of all time, and I absolutely just loved, and I've loved a couple of the offshoots that they did with it, is Law and Order. You know, I think Sam Waterston's character in Law and Order, Sam Waterston actually was in Newsroom too. I love Sam Waterston. I think he's great. But like some of the earlier Law and Orders, like with Benjamin Bratt and Jerry Orbach, really well done. I think some of the offshoots, SVU is incredible television. I mean, riveting stuff. They, I mean, I actually don't watch SVU anymore because I have kids and it's just too real for me.
Yeah, I get that.
But that's what they do. They bring about these real, they rip stories from the headlines and they bring it into the context of how law enforcement and the judicial system works in a way that, now people have pretty, you know, people who follow those shows have a pretty good understanding of how the judicial system works because it's so detailed. Those are some of my replacement ideas.
That's cool. I mean, there were a few others I'd put in there. I kind of didn't, I was going to put All in the Family in there, but I didn't know how much you, again, I was wondering, that was something more me growing up. All in the Family would definitely be in there. Dallas, was a big show when I was in high school and college. A very popular show. I put that in there. Charlie's Angels, I mean, was iconic as well. You know, it was female cops, three female cops. You never saw anything like that before. You know, there was Police Woman, but I think Charlie's Angels took the really pioneered it for the female police or private investigator, let's say they were. They were private investigators there. So there was a lot I could put in there. Weeds is a more recent. I think Weeds was brilliant. As a program, and Entourage is more recent ones as well.
Entourage was really fun.
Entourage was great. So that,
you know, Jay mentioned Friends a minute ago too. Friends was a fun show. I didn't really get into it, but it was.
My son loves Friends, and that was a show, you know, was on when he was born, but he watches Friends a lot. That's, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Friends. But yeah, anyway, that was our One Must Go segment sponsored by United Cigars. let's kind of do the next segment too, because I want to make sure we don't get it in too late. And new segment by Tobacco Era USA. It's called Great Things Are Happening Here. We're going to be introducing this on the Tuesday show. Sponsored by Tobacco Era USA, and you know, they're the makers of many iconic brands, and they just released the Vega Fina 1998 right now. That was a cigar that was in Europe originally, and now making its way into the U.S. market now. They did a nice launch for that cigar. That was a great they did the like a party kind of with a New Year's theme, and retro 1998 theme, so I think they did a good job with that. But in this segment, we talk about try to find a positive story, right? I think we each picked one, and maybe this is the format we'll do for now on. We each pick one. I kind of like this. So the first one that I picked was Mark Cuban and Delonte West. So if you didn't hear that story, Mark Cuban, Delonte West is a guy who used to play for the Dallas Mavericks, and Mark Cuban owns that team, and Mark Cuban's a very polarizing figure. But I guess what happened is Delonte fell on some very hard times, and they found him panhandling somewhere in Dallas, right? And Mark Cuban got word of it and basically went out there, brought his mother out there, offered to give him some help, and got him the help he needs right now, he got him into a rehab program, it was right now. He's going, you know, so that's really good news right now. I kind of like the fact, you know, that Cuban, this is a very human story. You can say what you want about Cuban, politically, personally. I think this was very, very genuine that happened here. And he's going to pay for his treatment and everything and really try to get this guy back on track right now. And a lot of it's going to be on Delonte to kind of, you know, take what Mark is bringing him, but good story. I think that's a good story to hear. It was something so much better than hearing people knock the politics lately and stuff like that. And I thought it was a beautiful story.
No, it really is. You know, as polarizing as Mark Cuban is, you know, his players love to play for him.
They do.
You know, he's created a really, he fell on some bad headlines a couple of years ago with some really bad things that were going on in the front office with sexual harassment and things like that. But he was very quick to, make amends and right the ship. And so he cares about his employees. He cares about his players. His players love playing for him. He's made it fun. I mean, when he bought the team, he did the entire, you know, locker room area, really made it an inviting place. I mean, brought video games in there, you know, really made it a home for his players so that they could relax and unwind after giving it all on their court. And so players love to play for him. And he in turn loves his players back. You know, it's, him and Jerry Jones have a similar take on that. Jerry Jones loves his players too. And you can say what you want about Jerry being, you know, an owner and a general manager, and you can critique him all you want on that. But you know, the fact remains is that his players love to play for him. That being said, going back to Mark Cuban and Delonte West, it doesn't surprise me at all that Mark Cuban did this. It's totally within his personality. Mark's a very, very, very personable person, and he takes we talk about relationships. He takes relationships incredibly serious. And like, if you burn him, he's got no place for you. But I mean, if you're loyal to him, and he will clearly give you the shirt off his back.
You know, Bear, we've talked about the whole situation with Avery Johnson, who was the coach, and he got fired, right, from Mark Cuban.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Carlisle comes in there. Rick Carlisle wins a championship. I get that. But the Mavericks fall on some hard times for a while on the court. And he stuck with Rick Carlisle. There was, you know, he wasn't a guy, you know, a lot of owners would have fired Rick Carlisle for the run they had, you know, and Mark stuck with him. And I respect that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm always the one about getting on coaches, but, you know, good for Mark Cuban. He stuck with him.
Yeah, and Mark's thing has always been about Rick is that he wasn't going to fault Rick for the decisions that he made. I mean, Mark blew up that championship team. It was Mark's decision to do so. It was Mark's decision to try and rebuild the team in the way that he's trying to do it. And he hasn't done well, frankly, with it.
No,
he hasn't. And until recently, now they've got a pretty stacked roster, and they're making improvements to kind of, you know, get back up to that championship caliber team. You know, with Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis and some other key players and stuff. So it's, you know, he was never going to fault Rick Carlisle for that decision, you know. And so with Delonte West coming, you know, being taken care of by him, it's totally indicative of his personality. I'm a fan of Mark Cuban. I think he's a great owner. I think he's made some questionable management decisions. Overall, I think he's done an incredible job as an owner.
I think he has too. I think he really has done a good job.
And I think he's done a good job overall. And clearly, like I said, he cares for the people that work for him.
Yep, he does. Okay, now you had this next story, which I wasn't aware of. So this is a pretty good story too.
Yeah, this is a really cool story. So I found this out. So, you know, there earlier this week, it was actually published today where I found it. So it was the lifelong dream of this particular person that was the subject of this article. The Marios, and I'm going to totally butcher his name, Marios Giancau is a runner from Greece. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he's been incredibly successful in that endeavor. He has a long track record for taking on challenges. He's trekked 168 miles across the Almorim Desert, and he also took first place in a frigid 93-mile cross-country race in Antarctica.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's on his resume of feats. So he's climbed Mount Olympus at its highest peak 50 times in his lifetime. So pretty cool. Like, incredible athlete. And he actually met and befriended a 22-year-old biology student, again, totally going to butcher her name, Eleftheria Tosio, and learned that was her dream, was to actually summit Mount Olympus herself. And so it was something that he wanted to take on, but there's a crux in this whole thing. Tosio is disabled. And so what Marios did was he modified backpack, and along with an 8-member support team, they summited Mount Olympus together.
Wow. That's if you look at the picture, we're going to put the links in for these stories. If you look at the links in the link of that picture, it's an amazing picture.
Yeah. I mean, this was her lifelong dream to do this.
This was not a trivial thing that he did. I mean, you see this thing is rocks. They're up the rocks of Mount Olympus here. This is, you know, not like a, you know, this was an incredible feat.
Yeah, it's one thing to take your entire body weight up a mountain of any kind, but to have someone literally on your back, I mean, that's crazy.
The other thing, as I went and looked at the story before, is this was an overnight thing that they did too. So they did camp. Now, camping when you do these mountain climbing camps are, they're horrendous conditions you're doing this under.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this wasn't a weekend hike in the woods.
No. No, this is, like I said, it's very difficult. It's very tough conditions you're doing this under. And I thought this is, like I said, just, I guess this just happened in the last week.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very good pick as well. I think, like I said, you know, this is the stuff I wish we'd see more of social media than the politic bashing we're getting. You know, that's good job there by that. That was a good pick.
Thank you.
Yep. So those were our great things are happening here, sponsored by Tilacarero USA. And like I said, be sure to be on the lookout for the Vega Fina 1998. Let's get back to, do we have anything we want to say? I'm at the end of my cigar. Anything else we want to say on the cigar before we kind of hit some of the other media topics?
No. I do want to ask you what I'm smoking next, though.
Okay.
So I have a Blackwork Studio Green Hornet.
Mm-hmm.
I have the La Aurora A Exclusivo from this year.
Okay.
I have a Plasencia 146 Concesa.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Nat Sherman Timeless Limited Edition TAA 2019.
We're going to wrap up the show with Nat Sherman. So my vote would be for the Nat Sherman.
Okay.
Which I'm going to light up the Limitada as my next cigar.
Okay.
And I know we're going to wrap up with some closing comments on Nat Sherman. So why don't we, if that's okay with you? It was between that or the La Aurora, but I think since we're doing Nat Sherman, let's do that.
Okay.
And this was one. And this was one. This Limitada was sent by you. It's a Ben Lee favorite. So.
Oh, you got my package.
Yes, I got your package. Thank you. I just got it. Yes. It came yesterday. I meant to tell you when we were talking last night. So I'm smoking the Limitada. They did a couple limited editions. This is the Limitada, and they did the TAA last year, as well as an Apoca one as well. Which I have an Apoca in there, too. How about that? That's great. All right. Media. Bear, the one thing that I'll kind of really say that I think is the biggest problem in media is, and we kind of hit this, right, is the concept of when you get friendly with a person in the business where it's a very good friendship, or you develop a favorite brand. And those are things that sometimes I think are bigger problems of compromising integrity than taking sponsor money. Thoughts on that?
Well, I think we kind of covered it a little bit with relationship building. But I think inherently, as long as you're honest and transparent about some things, I think that's where you don't have any problem. When you do have a problem is when you're not transparent, you know, about it.
Right.
I've often said on the show, and my show for that matter, that, I mean, one of the reasons that I'm sitting across from you today is because of my love for La Flor Dominicana. It's probably my, you know, still probably my favorite brand, you know. I still smoke them. I still really enjoy them. They'll always have a special place in my heart. I've built up a really nice, it just so happens that I've built up a really nice personal relationship, personal friendship with the VP of sales and John Carney. But I think I'm being honest. I'd like to think that I'm being honest and transparent about it, is that I don't think that's affected my coverage very much. It's, you know, when I host shows, I have had La Flor Dominicana people on. I've had, John's been on my show once before. He's actually going to be on again. I've had Tony, Antonio Gomez, show.
Lito as well.
We interviewed Lito here, yep, on this show. But, you know, I feel like I haven't oversaturated my audience with La Flor Dominicana stuff. So as an example. And so I think I've tried to be as fair as possible with that. I try to do the same thing actually when I work retail. You know, I try not to only smoke their, always promote their cigars. You know, I try to best suit the customer for what they will enjoy, you know?
Right.
So I approach it that way too. So I think taking that approach, I think you can convert it over to media coverage too. So, And I think that that's where, again, where you have a problem with some, you know, media brands that are out there is when they develop too much of a relationship and it just becomes like overly saturated and overly apparent that they, you know, that they are a brand favorite when they, you know, dominate or are, you know, when they dominate like top 25, you know, it's abundantly clear and apparent that the relationship is affecting, you know, the content that you're putting out. And I don't think that's a positive.
I agree. The biggest, like, the reviews, I get some blowback if I give a lower score to someone I have a relationship with. But arguably, not even arguably, the two biggest, the end of the year list is the biggest amount of whining I see. And that's where I have no friends. That's where I just have no friends. They can't be friends with the year of the end list. People are going to be pissed. And I've accepted that very early on. And I think I was talking to you. I don't explain it away. It's you didn't make it. That's it. So I'm sorry. I know it's a cruel answer. But you can't. That's why I have criteria. But I'll tell you, the biggest thing I got was Battle of the Bands. Battle of the Bands, I got more blowback on that than anything. I it was incredible. Now, what happened is the Battle of the Bands was announced before I announced my criteria. So I just kind of had to let all that criteria go because people didn't know what the criteria was. But even some of the criteria afterwards, yeah, you didn't make it. Even if they met the criteria, you didn't make it. I couldn't let everyone in. It was reality.
Yeah, it's a five pack, man. I mean, it's
a five pack. But if I didn't put criteria in, and that's where I knew if I didn't put the criteria in, I had no leg to stand on, because then it looked like I had to put something in there to put a level of consistency in there that this is what you had to do to qualify with the pack. And the criteria is you had to own a factory and you had to the person had to be in the business for over 25 years. People, you know, but that was my decision I made. So you can't, you know, believe me, you can't do it. And I see certain brands where you get this like fanboy nation emerge. We know what those brands are. They comment on every social media post this person makes. The person can do no wrong. They'll share stuff from that brand as opposed to other brand. I mean, it's just over. And I get we all sometimes share things of people we know. I get it. But it's sometimes so over the top and so obvious, right, that's what they're smoking. And that's, I think, very damaging to media. I think that's more of a problem than I've seen with the sponsor stuff. I really do.
Yeah, I agree. I think across it and you know, that be that as it may, you know, that's a decision that you've made and that's fine. It really is. But you also need to be just transparent about it. I think that's the key. You can't say, you know, you can't stand on a pedestal or soapbox and say that you don't have that. That you don't have that bias when there clearly is. We have biases too. We were talking about that. There's bias in media. We try to be as unbiased as possible. We try to be fair to everybody. I think we accomplish a really good job. I think we do a good job at accomplishing that. But you know, bias is going to creep in. You know, anywhere, no matter how much criteria you throw on something. No matter how much disclaimer you put on something, no matter how even with the way that we frame questions, you know, like they can be construed as, you know, sucking up or being a sycophant or, we were having this discussion, you know, I've gotten feedback personally that's kind of my nature and I don't view it as that. And you were very quick to back me up and I appreciate it, but you know, I just try to be respectful of, you know, of everyone that I happen to be sitting across from. and really, really admiring them for what they are, which is an impact on the industry that I love.
Yeah, I back you up. I think you're look at this. I got the special sauce on me as I was eating it. All right. No, I agree with you on that. You know, I think you're a passionate guy, and I think you've it's on the mic. Look at this. It's even on the mic.
Oh my God.
This is classic. The special sauce just leaked on the mic. This is an epic moment that's got to go on our best of show.
This is riveting.
Don't get special sauce at 11:40 at night. I'm waiting for the comments to come. Yeah.
God.
I got an update from Alan Rubin, and he
Jesus.
And he went to the table. The Yankees and the Miami Heat have both lost. Rough night for Alan Rubin.
Oh man. Oh baby Jesus. Yeah. Oh.
In a serious thing, we're trying to have a conversation with I get special sauce all over the place here from the Big Mac. Not a good idea to have a Big Mac on the air.
Oh.
How do we?
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh. Wow.
All right, I'm gonna bring this back here. Yeah. So, I don't know how we bring it. So yeah, I agree. I think in the end, Bear, the arbiter has to be our audience, and they're the ones who are going to decide this if we're being honest and have the integrity. And that's the only – and we're not going to have 100%, I'm sure. But in the end, that's got to be the arbiter that we're going to be – you know, we'll do that with reviews and scoring, you know, things like that.
Right, absolutely. And, I think there's something to be said because, like, there's a lot of stuff out there I like so-and-so because they say it, like they call it like it is and they say it like it is, or, you know, I like so-and-so because they like my favorite brand and stuff. And again, that's the beauty of this industry, and that's the beauty of cigar media. There's something for everybody out there. We've chosen to go a different direction with it, which again, it's not for everybody, and that's fine. We have a very, like you said, we have a very industry heavy audience, and they like it for what it is. I think the thing that we're trying to convey here is that, you know, that some of those behaviors and some of those tendencies have the potential to be damaging to your brand and damaging to what you may be trying to accomplish. If you want to be a brand X influencer ambassador, we've already stated there is a place for you.
Right.
You know, but you can't sit there and say something. You can't say that you are something when you're not. I think that's what we're trying to get at.
I agree. I totally agree with that. This is not a good idea having a Big Mac with this microphone. So, this is going to punt. Anything else we want to say on media?
No, I think we covered it.
Yeah, I think we covered it too. So let's turn our attention to the town hall that happened. And I want to mention the town hall is, that took place. Let's mention our sponsor first. Illusione Cigar, deep in flavor, deep in your mind. We are not industry standard, Illusione Cigars. So, Bear, Aaron and I did talk a lot about this on Thursday night, but I think it was appropriate to get your perspective on this. I know I heard a little bit of it on Ben Lee's show. Give me your thoughts on that.
On what?
On the town hall. I mean, do you have any general thoughts and observations?
Oh, excuse me. I apologize. Yes. So So I really would like to say how I think it's really, I think it was really impressive to have so many industry folks inside the so many industry folks town hall, and it was a collection of some of our industry's finest representatives, a lot of members of the PCA board, some people involved in CRA gave some statements. So I thought it was a really awesome collection of folks, and it was really nice to invite us being consumers, PCA members, CRA members, to kind of sit down and hear some of those perspectives and comments. And I thought a lot of what was said was really unique, particularly on some of the cigar manufacturer pieces. And so, like, a lot of these folks that were on this particular town hall, we've seen interviews with them before, and they folks, but a lot of times you hear the same story a couple of times, or they share the same perspective on multiple platforms and everything. And it's kind of, you've been there, you've heard that on some certain aspects, but there was some incredibly really unique remarks and candid responses by some of the folks in the industry, which I found really interesting. And I thought was really unique. I was particularly moved by Carlito Fuente and the way that he remarked about bringing together and basically uniting the body of our industry. I was particularly moved by his words. I thought it was really great that Boutique Cigar Association and was represented by Dr. Gabby Catfey, who got a spot on there. So that's something that I think that BCA has been angling for a while, is kind of in, and we're able to give a statement. I think it was really great to have him there. Those were some of my initial positives takeaways from the town hall. Some of my other observations were, strictly speaking, and I think we can definitely hit on this, it wasn't a town hall. Town hall is a very by definition, is a very candid Q&A. It's the shotgun approach. It's typically seen in the political spectrum, where a candidate or a person holding political office is basically at the mercy of the audience. Variety and an array of subjects, and it lasts for a really long time. And you basically put yourself on the hot seat and are forced to answer questions. And they're incredibly productive, and they give you a lot of perspective on that particular candidate or that particular a public official. They can be very telling, and it can be very influential in, whether or not you agree with them, disagree with them, or, are somewhere in the middle. But they're incredibly productive, tools, if you will. This wasn't a town hall by definition. They took a couple of questions at the end of video, were basically scripted statements by several, again, board members of the PCA. And the only people that I think weren't reading scripts were, again, some of the cigar manufacturers, like Carlito Fuente, Rocky Patel, and a couple of others that did not read scripted statements. And while those scripted statements were informative, it wasn't a town hall. Like, I was really interested in hearing a lot of questions from the audience. I was thinking about posing a couple myself. I didn't, but I thought that, it could have been incredibly valuable, for the PCA and CRA to listen to the audience. Took maybe, I don't want to misspeak here, but I think they took four, maybe five questions at the very end.
If that many.
And yeah, I think I might be a little generous, but it wasn't very many to begin with. And so this wasn't a town hall. That was my biggest observation with it. And there's a couple of others. I don't want to step too much on your toes here, Coop. But I think one of the things that I found interesting, where this was categorized and advertised as a PCIA town hall. Well, the two faces of those organizations. Now you could argue that John Anderson, and who's the head of the PA board, who did speak, was there and did speak, but the executive director Scott Pierce did not. He was present. He was on the call. Director Grand Loop of CRA also did not speak either. And so I thought that was really an interesting decision by both those organizations to not have their figureheads speak. So those are a couple of my takeaways.
Yeah, I covered a bunch of these takeaways on Thursday, but let me kind of address a few of those things. First of all, I agree with you. First of all, I wanted to say I thought this was a positive thing. I think it was very good that they had a meeting like this. So I support that. I think it was a very good thing that they did that. Don't forget, a lot of us may know a lot of the stuff they said, but this was meant to reach a bigger audience. And I think what they did with that was a very good thing. So I give them some props on that.
Yeah.
Dead on about the town hall. I don't know why it was branded as a town hall. To take the first question, and I know we're Monday morning quarterbacking here, and I mentioned this on Thursday. The first question you take is the PCA going out of business after they just talked for 50 minutes on what they're doing was a bad question. I don't know who moderated that question. There had to be a better question than that, right? I can understand if you took that at the beginning of this or if it was a pure town hall. But I think the John Anderson's comments were very clear. The PCA is not going anywhere, and they're getting through this, and they're aiming for the trade show, and they're, you know, so I give them credit on that.
They just spend 50 minutes talking to you about what their business is and what they're doing to move forward.
Right. So I don't know why you took that particular question. I just rolled my eyes when that question happened. I'm like, that's what I would. I mean, I understand that you may want to vet the questions beforehand. Right. So I have no problem vetting questions with a town hall. Sometimes you got to do that. Right. But still, I thought that wasn't good. I thought putting this before the presidential debate was an absolutely dumb move. I think it compressed the meeting and people were kind of getting ready to go watch the debate. I didn't see what they were, especially this wasn't like they weren't talking a lot about the presidency with this. There was some, you know, obviously there's some things, but so I didn't like that part either. As far as why are we having this? Have it on a night where you can really own the night is where I'm getting at. I think you would have had a better one, and I think you could have maybe taken some more questions on that. Participants did a very good job. You mentioned Gabby Caffey. Boutique Cigar Association has a seat at the table. They've been preaching. They want a seat at the table. Before the meetings, before the town hall started, I didn't see Gabby Caffey on the agenda. Did you?
No.
So, I don't know if it was a last minute thing or whatever. Good job by both. Good job. BCA gets a seat at the table. Gabby gets to give his message. And you know, I think there's a message that a lot of people haven't heard from him on that. And it was the first time I've seen the PCA really reach out to the BCA. And I have been very critical of the BCA with their approach on a lot of things. So I don't want to say, and you know, I've been very critical. You've heard on other shows, I've been very critical of them, but good job by both on that. They got on there, which is good. I mentioned on Thursday though, the BCA is getting ready to sell direct to consumer. I don't know how you build this relationship with the PCA and now you're getting ready to launch a website to go direct to consumer. I don't know how that's going to flush out. Either the PCA people don't view, people at the PCA aren't worried about that, or they're going to be pissed off about that. But this is something the PCA's fought against. You know, this was a big problem with Davidoff, right? Selling direct to consumer that, you know, they had. So I don't quite understand. If the BCA was looking to make ground, boy, you're picking a bad time. You got the ground made. If this thing starts to blow up on you, you may find yourself no longer with a seat at the table.
It's true.
And I'm not saying that the BCA shouldn't sell direct to consumer. That may be the best model for them. I'm just saying if you're trying to build a relationship with the PCA, what are you doing? I who's making decisions there is I don't understand that. Let me give you another couple. But you mentioned Scott Pierce and Glenn Loop. Not there.
Not speaking.
I was surprised on both of those. I know Glenn's getting ready to wrap up his tenure. I totally understand that. I think having John Anderson on was important because especially when it came to the furlough message, I really think that needed to come from a board member. And we were critical of that a few months ago. So I think that was the right thing to do it. That being said, I would have found a way to have Scott Pierce on that program on the air. He's still the executive director. And has had probably the most difficult tenure of any executive director. And I think we've had our critiques of him. I think we both feel he's done a very good job under circumstances. So I would have liked to have seen him on there as well.
I'd take away the adjective of very, but I think he's up and I've told him as much.
What was that?
Yes, he has a and frankly, anyone else in a position that he is equivalent to. And I think it would have been very respectful to have him on. I think this would have also been a fantastic opportunity to name his predecessor. Or to name his successor, rather. Excuse me.
Glenn.
Name his successor.
Glenn? You talking Glenn?
Yeah.
I don't think there is one. But I don't think there is one.
I'm just saying this would have been a great opportunity to do it. We're 30 days away from no leadership, no executive director of the CRA. He's going to be stepping down after the November election. We're 30 days away, Coop. They should have one, and this would have been a great opportunity to announce, you know. True.
People say Facebook went down, but I think we're still going. I told them to refresh.
It says we're still live. You are frozen.
Am I frozen now on the air? You're seeing me frozen?
On Facebook, you are.
Yeah, we might have lost the live stream, but it's still going. Yeah, it froze. I'm just going to keep going with the show. Because we are recording.
No, it's back up again.
Are you sure it's back up and not like kind of in a hold?
No, it's frozen again.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Something's going on with Facebook Live, I think. So, I mean, we'll just keep going. Yeah, it's like that last minute, it's replaying it over and over again.
Yeah.
So, don't know what happened. People say it's still not working. Yeah, it's a Facebook issue because we're still recording. So, anyway, we'll just keep going there. I don't know. It is what it is. There was a couple of other things I saw in there. What was your opinion on the exclusive cigars?
I mean, it's a model that they've had before. You know, certain companies have always done, PCA only cigars. You know, we mentioned earlier, Crux has always had the IPCPR edition or what they were going to create, Go edition, with 2020 before the 2020 show got canceled. Other companies have only done PCA releases. Southern Draw, Black Label have only done PCA offerings. So I think, you know, it's exciting that a lot more people are getting on board. I think it would be really impressive and be really awesome if it was a universal adoption, all PCA members and all vendors of PCA to release an event, release a cigar or release a product that is only available to PCA attendees?
I've kind of said this. Yeah, it looks like it's down.
But that being said, Coop, what I'll say about that is mm-hmm. it's also dated, right?
Yes.
We've been there. We've done a mechanism to galvanize support for the PCA. If this is their the arrow in the quiver that they're trying to pull and use, it's going to fall flat because they've been there. They've done that. This has been done. If they want to really revolutionize the trade show and they want to galvanize support for a 2021 show, they need to really revolutionize the way they're thinking. They need to do something different. That's been the criticism of them. I think, you know, that, and there's opportunity. There is opportunity to do something. I don't know what it is. And that's a tall order for, you know, from someone who's not necessarily offering any alternatives or suggestions. I don't know. But again, you know, I just know that I'm hearing what you hear every year is, you know, yeah, record number of attendees. We see less and less, you know, traffic, foot traffic, that is, is the same amount of business being done? Well, I don't know. You know, we don't have access to those numbers. But if you're really wanting to galvanize and rally support of the PCA, then you need to do it. And then you need to do something different. This has been done. It's my only thing. It's been done.
I don't think it's enough. Like, we've seen these cigars, all these PCA exclusive cigars. I don't think it's enough to a retail said, I got to go to this show to get these cigars. Right. I don't think it's something that should be discouraged either.
No, in fact, I think it should be encouraging. Like I said, I think it would be awesome if it would be something universally adopted.
I agree.
I mean, even better yet is to really, I mean, if you really want to make it optimal for attendees, is not only are you going to have access to this special cigar only, but we're also going to refuse to, like, just outright refusal. No one is allowed to, nobody is allowed to purchase it. No one's allowed to get it unless you attend the show. Like, you know, they can say exclusive all they want, but some of those exclusive cigars still end up in, you know, humidors where of people who haven't attended, you know. But also to that point, what you do is not only make it that, but also make it financially viable for attendees to make, you know, like I wouldn't necessarily, you know, create a product that's, you know, PCA exclusive and a PCA exclusive that's, you know, like a $15 cigar. Either.
Yeah.
I'm not saying make these bundle sticks, but make it something that's approachable not only for the retailer and exclusive without necessarily, you know, breaking their wallet. Make it approachable.
I agree. But I think there's three types of cigars you could put into this. And by the way, Facebook's down at this point, so I can't even get the interface up. I think the first thing is you can come out with an exclusive blend. Second thing is you can come out with an exclusive size. And I think in both of those cases, you're not going to see the best foot forward with these, right? They're not going to – some companies not going to put their best blend out, right, and say it's PCA only. You have to be at the trade show and order it on the floor. Same with the size. They're not going to put their Robusto and Toros to the PCA only. They're the best-selling sizes, right?
Right.
So I think there's this third category, and this is the one that I think is the most interesting. It's the idea of doing an early release to the PCA. and give these retailers a year window and do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Or how about cigars that are introduced? So cigars that are regular production, right? You're announcing your, because I mean, that is what the PCA is. It's typically a launching platform for new product, right? That all attendees get first dibs, first shipment. Nobody else that did not attend, they get it. You know, it doesn't have to be anything crazy. Right. You're not saying like month or 2 months or a year or anything obnoxious like that, but a couple weeks before.
Yeah.
Hey, we recognize you're, you know, I'll pick on Abe for a second. Abe was planning, I believe, on attending this year. But historically, he hasn't for the past few years, right?
Right.
And he's a, but, you know, maybe delay shipment to him for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Give it to attendees. You know, and I don't mean to pick on Abe. I'm not trying to. And I certainly wouldn't suggest, you know, putting him in a disadvantage from a business point of view. But, you know, that would also give a really good advantage to attendees as well. That might motivate someone like Abe to go to the show. Well, heck, I'm not waiting for two weeks for new product. You know?
Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly.
That's the kind of thing to galvanize support. Like, not only are we going to give you exclusive product, but we're also going to give you an exclusive window to all product that's launched at the trade show.
I think that, yeah, like I said, I think something like that's more reasonable. You know, like I said, I just don't see, like, I used this example on Thursday night with my father's cigars, right? Like, they come out with one big release a year, right? I don't see them, kind of like making a PCA exclusive to A release. There is one thing we left out. And that's limited edition. So you could do a limited edition that way.
Right.
We didn't talk about that on Thursday night, but that is one thing you could do with that.
Or you can also do things to, again, you can really galvanize support too in a way that you can galvanize support and attendance by region too. You know, there's been bickering about how, you know, East Coast people don't travel all the way to Vegas because it's such a large trek, right?
Right.
Okay. So similar to a lot of these companies like Avo or even Crowned Heads have done, do regional releases that are also only PCA oriented. So you can get the Avo Eastern, but only if you attend the show.
Yeah, and then what happens is, though, I see it never works, but they do that. Reason why I say it never works is because they find a way to get them. They horse trade with retailers and stuff like that.
Well, put some kind of incentive in there too.
You could. That's a possibility.
Put some kind of incentive. Put some kind of disclaimer on it. Like, you know, if we see our product in a non-attendee store, you know, we're gonna find out, you know, how they were able to obtain it, and if we do, and we find out that it was you who traded with them, then, you know, you lose out on this extra benefit. Whatever, you know, X. You know, whatever benefit X is. There has to be a consequence. And that's been the problem behind the whole show deal concept, right? Oh, I go to the show to get the deals. Well, if you can get the deals without going to the show, then what's the point of going to the show?
Yeah.
Right? That's been one of the longest standing arguments in the for dwindling attendance for years now. Well, I'm not going to go to the show. I don't have to go to the show to get the deals. I don't have to do it. Well, make that a requirement. Like, that's the easiest way to do that is to nip it in the bud. You want to look, no one wants to tick off an account, and I get that. And again, to use Abe as an example, I mean, that's a lot of business that you're giving up. Yeah. But listen, if you truly support the PCA organization, which supports the industry, which I am entirely for,
yep,
then get on the phone with that retailer. Listen, you want this stuff? Just show up. You don't have to bring your entire company. Just you show up or send a delegate, something.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. That's a fair point.
We have, I mean, these, we're talking about people with enormous influence to take a small stand like that. I mean, if someone like Rocky Patel was to say to a retailer, hey, I've been supporting I've been supporters, and I know you're a member of this organization. You need to show up. And because I want you to support it too. And here's why. Here are the reasons why. You're going to get exclusive products. You're going to get exclusive deals. I'm not going to give you the deal without it because, we'll work out something, but I'm not going to give you the same deal that's going to benefit the people who attended because we need to support the organization. And I'm putting Rocky on the spot here. It's just someone I picked up. To use him as an example, commands enormous influence. All these guys do. And so there's great opportunity there to really, again, to galvanize attendance and to repopularize the trade show.
Yeah.
Bear, you back?
I was talking the whole time.
Yeah, I don't know. You went. Weird, there's weird stuff happening tonight. So I about the last minute I didn't catch.
Okay. So what I said basically is that these individuals manufactured enormous influence. Did you catch that at all when I was saying
No, I didn't.
Someone like,
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so my example was Rocky Patel. If Rocky Patel says, listen, I've been spending my hard-earned dollars on the PCA to support this organization and to support this industry, which he has, and I want you to attend the show. No, I'm not giving you the show deals. I'm not doing it. We can work out something. But if you want these amazing deals that I'm going to give at the show, send a delegate, send something. I need you to help me support this organization and support this industry. I need your help. Someone like, again, I just picked Rocky off the top of my head, but Rocky commands enormous influence. All these people do. And if they took a stand and made a stand like that, would they lose some business? Yes, I understand that would. And I think the business that they would gain, the respect that they would gain, and the support for the PCA that they would gain could supersede it.
Agree.
That was my point.
Okay. Okay, yep. And I don't know how my everything just croaked out, but we're still recording, but I can see you talking.
Yeah, your screen went blank.
Yeah, my screen went blank. It was very weird. I think it was something on my end that happened. I think there's something going on with Zoom and Facebook tonight. Okay, a couple
sounds
more.
Like my night the other night.
Yeah, it's been very unreliable lately. Are you on the? Okay. Did you notice the couple of little digs at the TPE?
Not as much as you did. So why don't you elaborate on it?
Well, there was one dig, and the dig was basically I think it was an important point for PCA to emphasize. So this is not a critique of them. In fact, anything, I think it was the offensive. They said basically, John Anderson said, this is the only trade show that puts 100% of the money back into the organization that's made at this. And that's an important point to distinguish themselves from TPA. I think it's a very important point. But I think they're also recognizing they have some competition right now.
Yeah.
And you had one more comment on bringing back Lisa Cox.
Yeah, I think a step in the right direction. So they announced at the tail end of the town hall that they are actually they're working their way through their furloughs and ending furloughs as quickly as possible was their position. And so they're as of that Monday, so that this past Monday, they reinstated Lisa Cox. Uh-huh. So another member of the PCA team, executive team, is brought back from furlough to again resume work.
Mm-hmm. So anytime you see that, that's definitely a positive. But there are still some people that are furloughed, and they said that the more people out of furlough. So I think that's a great step in the right direction. We wanted to see this before Labor Day. This is a little bit more than a month past our kind of unofficial deadline that we kind of set that we wanted to see. But they're still bringing them back, so that's good news. And I still am concerned about the legislative piece, the fight. I'm also concerned about a trade show at this point. We're 8 months away, months away from the trade show supposed to happening. And they're now going to have a competitor up against them 30 days before, 60 days, 30, 45 days before. So they really need to make a consolidated effort and an aggressive effort to try, again, I keep using the word, but I'll say it again, to galvanize attendance, to galvanize support. They need to rally their core people and really, really get the word out that they're taking this year seriously, and they're going to bounce back with a vengeance. They're going to kick COVID in the ass, and they're going to make a bigger and better and badder show than TPE ever could. They have to view it as a competition, man. There's one thing to be said about having a friendly working relationship or having a professional working relationship with, your competition, but you also have to acknowledge them as competition.
Yes. I think that's a very important point you make. I think that's something that I just felt that this passive, this frenemy stuff was just not working. I think you have to acknowledge that you have competition right now. I don't know. When they said that, I was like, how are you going to do this without bringing back employees? Well, it sounds like there's a plan to bring back employees.
Yeah. They said through the month of October, we're going to see more reinstatements from furlough. So we'll see what that means. If that's one more, or if that is, five more or whatever, we'll see.
Yeah, I agree. I agree on that. What's your confidence level?
In what part? That they're going to bring back people, or yep, that they're going to put on a trade show, or?
Yeah, that they're going to, that they're actually going to put on a trade show and have something different and innovative to the table. By the way, I brought the screen back up as we were talking.
I don't know, Coop. I need a little bit more time. My confidence level right now is incomplete because the whole process is incomplete.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to see what they do. I think it's going to be wait and see.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that. I think it's wait and see with this. There's not a lot of time if you think about it.
Less than 9 months.
Yeah. Very good points you make,
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing to do is to take an overwhelming positive approach to this. This was really good for them to sit down. This was very positive for people to sit down and watch and hear these statements and learn about the position, learn about the moves that they're making and everything. But yeah, there are some concerns about whether or not they're going to be able to pull this off. And so, for all intents and purposes, I'm going to do everything I can to be there.
to support the industry, to cover. There's a lot of wait and see. Plus you have the whole pandemic still lingering over everything.
Yeah. I mean, that could throw a monkey wrench into everything right now. Like that may be out of their control, but I think they got to go forward as if there is a trade show. You can't sit back and hope that the pandemic's going to resolve itself, because that has not worked. And, you know, I think TPE got a break. You know, they had an opportunity to move the trade show back and they did it. PCA is probably not going to get that option. And maybe they'll look at a backup. They should be looking at contingency plans if Vegas doesn't work out.
Right.
Yep. All right. Anything else we want to say on that?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. Yep. So we got our stream back up. It seemed like that kind of broke the momentum, and I apologize, but things happen sometimes technically out of our control. So I will, you know, if you're watching the replay of this, there'll be a full replay on Facebook. And, of course, we'll have the uploads to all the channels going forward. You want to do the last read or you want me to?
Go ahead.
All right. Let me just mention one other thing. We already talked about that, I just realized. So, and I want to mention, of course, our friends at Michael's Tobacco. All right. With just over a decade of ownership, Michael's Tobacco has become the premier tobacconist in the Dallas-Worth area and cigar patrons the world over, with two convenient locations in Euless, just a quick launch from the DFW airport and Keller, Texas. Michael's Tobacco stands as a beacon for the Texas cigar retailers. Michael's was the very first cigar lounge in the state of Texas to add a full bar to its ever-growing list of accommodations. Proprietor Mike Peacock is a former IPCR board member and now has made Michael's a family affair by having his son Bob join the ownership force. Under general manager and master storyteller Tracy Spence's leadership at Michael's, his self-proclaimed asset has been assembling, quote, the greatest cigar team in the cigar retail business, unquote, as well as building some of the finest relationships with the industry's most respected individuals. Inventory director Jason Fields handles and maintains two of the area's proudest humidors, containing premium cigars for everyone from the everyday smoker to the most ardent of rare puros. Under Mike, Bob, Tracy, and Jason's example, they've enlisted a staff of Kevin, Austin, Bear, Joe, Silas, and Brandon that collectively boast over 100 years of combined industry experience. Together, they have brought a true and blessed mainstay to their respective communities. Whether you're celebrating an anniversary, birthday, hole-in-one, or just a desire to relax, Michael's Tobacco will have the perfect cigar waiting with an exquisite beverage pairing and lively conversation. Visit michaelstobacco.com for more details and a calendar of upcoming events. Michael's Tobacco, not just a cigar shop, but the perfect blend of Texas hospitality and days of yore. And Bear is like, he left the building. All right, because while I was doing the read, I couldn't see that he left there. So, again, just a last reminder before we get in, the Facebook stream went down. I don't know what happened. It took a while to get it back up. So if you are watching this show now, if you're watching the live feed going on with this show right now, I will have a full version of the show uploaded. So if you missed anything, just feel free to, you'll catch that live upload going forward. We'll get that back, you know, up for you. And of course it will be available on iTunes and Google Play, YouTube, and all those fun things that we talked about earlier tonight, to do that. So, again, apologies to everyone, who did that. Because of this, I will accept contest entries from any Cigar Coop Facebook page tonight for the Trinidad giveaway. But it's got to be on the Cigar Coop page, whether it's the restart, the original show, or the full uploaded show that I will have. Okay, we're down to our last topic. This was a big show tonight.
Yeah.
Okay. Nat Sherman, epilogue. We're smoking Nat Sherman's right now. You know, it's kind of interesting. Developing Palates put a review up this week of the last Nat Sherman cigar, the TAA. And this thing's coming to an end. It really has come to an end. The store's closed right now. I've already heard the sales staff, some of them have already found new jobs. So this has come to an end.
Yeah. Coop, as you know, as our audience knows, and as you know, I'm a big purveyor of history, and you know, in our in our nation's history, there have been many storied brands and companies that have spanned the test of time. You know, companies that have been in business for, you know, well over 100 years, but decades and decades of history, their communities with great products, great customer service, great experiences, great memories, great legacy. And the sad thing is that Nat Sherman falls into that category. And the reason why it's sad is because it ceases to exist now.
Yeah.
You know, 90 years, almost a century of history gone. Multi-generations of memories gone. And you can always say, okay, well, you'll always have your memories and you have those. And yes, they are, but there's something to be said about passing experiences down from one generation to the next. You know, the idea of, you know, like, you know, taking your son or daughter to a local bakery or ice cream shop where you sat at the counter as a kid. And then now you're sharing something with them. And then maybe one day your grandkids. I mean, that's the type of legacy that we're talking about. You know, Nat Sherman, you know, the Sherman family for decades put memories together for families, for friends. And they'll never have those experiences again. So, well, it sounds like I'm getting a little bit emotional. It is. It's an emotional time. It's emotionally distressing. But, you know, I think the one big positive that I took from this is that throughout this entire bitter experience, it really was transformed into a bittersweet experience. Nat Sherman, you know, led by Michael Herklotz on the way out, was celebrated. You know, Michael didn't feel sorry for himself. He didn't allow for his team to feel sorry for themselves. He didn't, he didn't seek out or beg for empathy or sympathy. He simply just celebrated what he was a part of, what Nat Sherman was a part of. And he chose to focus on the people and the memories. And I'm very proud of the swan song that they put together. It was there's no other way to say it. It was.
Yeah. Well, yeah, very well spoken there. You know, a few thoughts I have as this era comes to an end. You know, I don't hold any ill will towards Altria making this decision. One, it was a business decision that they felt was in the best interest of their business, which is not primarily the premium cigar business. They certainly could have pulled the plug on Matt Sherman 3 years ago and many times after that. They didn't. They certainly didn't have to give Nat Sherman an opportunity to try to sell the brand. You know, they didn't have to, but they did it. So I don't hold any ill will on that. You know, businesses do come and go. Doesn't mean we have to not be – doesn't mean we have to like it. And certainly we don't like it. So, you know, that's a shame, you know, that happens. You know, we talked about – I think the last 10 years of Nat Sherman was an important part of its history. I think, you know, Michael brought that brand back. You could say, arguably brought it back a couple times, right? You know, even after the Altria thing and some of the problem, but, you know, certainly, the, you know, we always talk about the job he did from 2011, 2012, you know, fixing the distribution problems. They had atrocious distribution problems. You know, they were being flushed out and many people have heard that story before, and did a really good job. So, you know, And they went out, like you said, they went out on their terms, you know, in terms of how they closed it. And it was done with a lot of class. And New York is not the same city now with that store closed. You know, if you're a cigar enthusiast, that you just lost a iconic place right now. I wonder down the road if someone tries to resurrect the Nat Sherman brand. Right? So, you know, I don't think it's gonna something that's gonna happen in the next few months, but maybe 10 years from now, someone becomes intrigued with bringing back the Nat Sherman brand. Along the lines that, like, Bill Paley did with La Palina. So, I think that's something to watch. Like, this is goodbye for Nat Sherman from now. But I think at some point, brands come back. Brands have been brought back from the dead before. And I don't think it's something we're going to see in 2021, though. But I think we're looking down the road. Someone, I think, is going to say, you know what? I want to bring this thing back. So, we'll see. I don't, like I said, I think it's goodbye for now, certainly. I wouldn't hold your hopes up on that, but it's not, you know, but I look forward to this restarting again.
What was that last part, Coop? I'm sorry.
I look forward to this restarting again at some point. I really do. I think in my lifetime, this thing will be back, but it's going to be different. It's not going to be the same company. Someone's going to acquire the brand. And they're going to try to, you know, capture some of the spirit of that, you know. I don't know what Altria does when they sell it or how they sell it or if they let the brands go dormant. I don't know. It's very interesting to see with that. You know, technically, Nat Sherman, like, they were shedding the brand of this, you know, a couple years ago. If you look at, like, this had to do with the cigarettes, this was the timeless made for Nat Sherman. So the brand was timeless at this point. They'd really just say it was made for Nat Sherman International.
Right.
Yeah. Have you smoked the final Nat Sherman cigar, the 2020 TAA?
No. And I didn't get any, so.
I have one. I haven't smoked it yet. I hate the fact it was in a Mazo. I just said, sorry, Mike. I still hate that.
You couldn't let it off, man. You couldn't let it go.
I couldn't let it go. Man. I couldn't let it go. But yeah, so, you know, maybe we're looking at us as cigar historians. Let's not forget Nat Sherman. I think that's the one thing I want to say. Let's not let this brand just get forgotten about. Keep it alive in the annals of history there. You know, you sent me a very nice pack of cigars. There will still be Nat Sherman reviews coming up. You know, I'll still do it. So, we'll see. And then, you know, I think we'll have Michael on some shows following, you know, once everything's settled out, and we'll go from there.
I am so excited. I am so excited to see what he does. I think whatever. Can you hear me, Coop?
Yeah, you were cutting in and out.
I'm so excited to see what Michael Herklotz does.
Well, I think that's going to be the big question.
I think we haven't seen a free agent like him in a long time.
I just don't think he's going to be in the cigar business. It's going to take a lot. I don't know what company would take him. I think he's going to be a very attractive candidate for the spirits business.
I think he's an attractive candidate for anything.
Right, right. I think he would. I don't want to say where he's thinking of. I don't know what he's been thinking, so I don't want to put anything in his mouth. I certainly would want him to stay in the cigar business.
Yes,
but you know he's got a family and things like that, so there's a lot to consider right now with that.
Yeah.
But do you see any cigar company? Yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, it's incredible because I think New York is home for him. Right. I don't think he's planning on moving. I don't think it's hard to speculate, but it would just be, you know, it would be so great to see him in this industry again.
Yeah.
I mean, he's incredible. And the work that he did was incredible. He's so, you know, driven, and he's also just has he's incredibly diverse. in his interests, in his talents. You know, gosh, man, he could literally, the sky's the limit with him. It really is. He could really do anything. The spirits world, jewelry, clothing, you know, perfumes and colognes. I mean, just, I mean, name it. And you could see a fit there.
Yep. All right. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Okay, ready?
Okay.
You are a cigar company, okay? And you are drafting the free agent. And you have an opportunity to trade for the number one pick in the draft, right? Which company trades for that number one pick to get Michael Hurkacz? I have a definitive answer, but I'll see what you say.
So essentially, where do I think he goes in the cigar industry?
Yeah, that's kind of like the roundabout way. Like, not where would be a fit for him. Let's not say where he goes. Where do you think would be a fit for him that he could stay in the cigar industry, maybe make a good salary, make a difference with the company? I have one in mind.
I think I have two.
Okay.
We've already talked for him because I think of another diversified brand that spans over a couple of luxury items. Mm-hmm. Where I think you to see what he would do with it. That would be with Room 101.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
You know, Matt Booth has.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Matt Booth has a jewelry component. As far as to my understanding, I think the jewelry business is probably the biggest part of his business portfolio. I know that he does cigars because he enjoys them. He also has a very small spirits component.
But the jewelry is where he made his, you know, the jeweler for the LA Stars, yeah.
Yeah, so I think he'd be a great fit to grow that. I mean, and what a guy to grow it, you know?
Grow both.
He could make, grow both, grow all three. And, really bring that brand into some national consciousness.
I can see that. The more you thought about it, the more I could see it, that's what I'm going to say. I could see it. I'm not saying it's a slam dunk, though.
And my other choice is slightly obvious, but, you know, it's interesting, you know, what they say when, like, you always talk about going home. You know, so there's always this kind of negative, carries with it a certain weight or a certain negative connotation to it. But I also think that there's some positives to it, and there's also some romanticism to it too. I really think that he could do a world of good at Davidoff again. You know, I think there's opportunity. I think financially speaking, I think the money's there. They still do offer a vast portfolio of products outside of the cigar world. You know.
Yep.
So they are international. There's a lot of places and a lot of good that he could do in that business. And, you know, and yeah, here's the best part about it. He knows it. He was there before. He learned lessons. He learned lessons at Nat Sherman. He could bring back that expertise that he already knows about the product. And then elevate it to an nth degree. I do have another one. I said two. I have another one, Coop. Can I say another one?
Yeah.
Am I talking too much? Okay. So I got thinking about this a little bit too. With Tabacalera USA, Altadis being sold, that frees up for a time.
Go ahead. Keep going. You were okay this time.
Okay. So you didn't hear anything of that?
Tabacalera USA.
Yeah, Tabacalera USA, because now they've been sold, and so now they're not restricted. They're not handcuffed
to a pending sale or to anything like that. So I think there's, I think the money is still there. I think there's some growth and opportunity, and you know, that would be a good hire to really launch and be a catalyst for some of those brands as they start this new era of Tabacalera USA.
Yeah, actually, technically, that's still a pending sale, just so you know. It's expected to close the end of the month, though.
Okay.
But yeah, just so you know that. But so I room 101, I can see the pieces putting together with that. I don't see Davidoff happening. Tobacco is an interesting one. But I don't think it's that one either. But you know, I get what you're saying with that too. There's a new era. Things can change with new ownership. Right, so that's why I see the angle you're going at with that. My pick was La Palina. Pelly Park, right? In New York, very urban type brand still. History with the brand. I think Mike could help out Clay Roberts and Sam Phillips a great deal having him in there. He could become the face of the brand, right? He could become the face of the brand. He could work on a lot of the production projects. And frankly, I think he could fix a lot of things that – and that's not – Clay and Sam are great guys. I think they're doing a great job. But I think they can really benefit from having Mike in there and being the face of that brand. I think he could get it. I think he could really get. I see it as a great trifecta under Bill Paley. I think he'd be a really good fit there.
Yeah, I think it's a man. That's a great pick. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, this is speculation. We're not. This is not rumor. This is speculating. We're just kind of having. I want to say we're having a little fun, but you know, we do this with sports figures all the time, right? Like, where's he going? You know, where's the coach going and stuff like that? We're doing the same thing. Yeah. Just. These could be totally wrong. There's no wrong or right here. We're just looking at where there could be a fit. Yeah. So that's anything else you have on that, Sherman? Then you froze up.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nat Sherman.
Yep.
Thank you for 90 years of history. Thank you for countless cigars and countless memories of fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, hours upon hours of enjoyment, smoking your fabulous products, enjoying the incredible environment of your lounge. We bid you adieu and we thank you for everything that you did for us.
Absolutely. And as we enjoy these Nat Sherman cigars, like I said, let's keep the history of Nat Sherman alive. Let's not forget about them, and who knows, you know, what the future holds with that. And by the way, I have no information. I'm just, again, that was speculating, like someone down the road. Maybe.
Yeah. We're all speculating. And I said I had one, and then I said I had two, and then I'm like, oh, there's a third one.
Yeah.
If I started thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I think we've come to the end of the show here. Thanks to our audience who came back in. Sorry for the technical problems. Like I said, if you were watching this, this video, you can also enter the Tobacco USA Trinidad contest for the gift pack of the boombox, the domino set, and the band bank. Just put a comment in on why, basically, an experience you've had smoking a Trinidad cigar, or something, how you'd want to try, what Trinidad cigar you'd want to try. Hashtag it Trinidad50. You can put it on any Cigar Coop video for Primetime Episode Special Edition 85. I'll make sure I go into all of them, and we'll give a few folks, we'll put this out there an extra day so folks have a chance to do that. Bear, Sunday night, what you got coming up Sunday night?
We've got a really great couple of shows on the horizon. For Take 140, I'm really excited to be welcoming in a guest that I've been wanting for a long time. I've had the company represented on the show before a couple of times, but this will be a first time appearance by my guest. So I'm really excited to welcome in Mr. Jeff Hogan,
of Crux Cigars. So Jeff will be on board on Sunday night for our 140th take. As I mentioned earlier in the show, George Rami from Camacho Cigars, the week after that. And then later this month, I'm having a special birthday take. And Coop, you're a part of it.
Yes, I'm very excited. With two great guys who are going to be on with that night too. And Bear just cut out. But I believe it's John Carney and Miguel Chaudel.
Yes. So it's you, John, and Miguel will be on my special birthday take, and I'm excited to welcome you guys in. Don't worry, everybody. It's not going to be a celebration of me. We're going to have a lot of fun that night, but I thought I would welcome in some of my friends that I've made in the cigar industry. I've made a lot of them, so I couldn't get them all in, but I wanted to get a special group of guys together and celebrate my birthday. Feel good about myself. So
awesome.
That'll be fun.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for having me on there.
It was my pleasure.
Yep. And just a reminder, Thursday night, Oliver Nouveau of United Cigars will be our guest on the primetime episode 159. So you'll want to tune in for that. Anyway, apologies again for the technical issues on Facebook, but we will have a full show out there. That's going to wrap up primetime special edition 85 into the annals of history for Tuesday, October 6th, now Wednesday, October 7th on the East Coast. We'll see everybody, actually in the Central Zone as well. We'll see everybody on Thursday night. Have a great one, everybody.
We'll see you next time.